and we are back. Welcome back. It's your favorite radio show on TSN 690. That's right, it is. I know it is. It's the Kaufman Show. I'm Dave. That's Jay. That's Brian. That's right, Brian Wilde's already here. We'll get to him in a few minutes, but we are ready to go. It's going to be a big Kaufman Show tonight. Hello, Jay.
Hello, Dave.
How are you, sir?
Good. How are you?
I'm very good, man. It's what a watershed day in sports. What a cool day.
It was, these things seem to be happening on Mondays a lot, aren't they?
Well, you know that news is going to happen in a day that ends in Y. We're just lucky that it happens on Mondays.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, you want me to be, it's kismet, it's supposed to happen this way? All
yes.
Big news breaks on a Monday?
Absolutely, because
right.
They know we're going to be on at night.
That's right. That's right.
Everybody wants to get our opinion quickly.
I think Jason Collins might have waited. If he was thinking of others, he would have waited until Patrick Burke finished his finals.
Yeah.
Law exams at Harvard, and Craig Brownstein, his PR guy, had a gala for 5,000 people tonight. So I know this was not what they were expecting when they woke up Monday morning.
But then it wouldn't be his name day anymore.
Oh, is he Orthodox Greek, Jason Collins?
It doesn't matter if he is. That was my tweet of the day. Today in the Greek culture, the name Jason is celebrated as it is. It's my name day.
Do we name our own tweets of the day now? Is that how this
it's
works?
My tweet of the day because
my
I was proud of it. I was proud of it. And I said that how fitting that he would shine on a day like this because nobody should ever forget his name.
Well,
isn't that good?
I'm not used to you
something
having
positive.
Such cheesy tweets.
Yes,
yeah, that's
something positive. It got absolutely no retweets.
Well, as one's tweets of the day normally
it was
do.
Favorited once and got no likes on Facebook. So clearly everybody likes when I'm a little bit more negative I act like myself.
Well, let's try not to let that be the barometer of success. How many retweets and all the rest of that you got.
Well, it just makes I don't really care how many, but at least I'd know when there are a lot of retweets and likes. At least somebody's listening.
We'll get back to this very quickly in a moment. We're going to be joined off the top of the show by Bugs Burnett, Richard Burnett, renowned Montreal journalist and gay activist. Should be very exciting to speak with him today. But, you know, Jay, you can't put any stock into that anymore because so much of it is to do with promoted tweets and promoted Facebook posts. Tonight I put up a check out tonight on the Kaufman Show on Facebook. And Facebook asked me how much I would like to pay to promote the post. Said for $5, this will reach between 300 and 800 people.
Mm.
And I thought, nuts to that. The day has come. And honestly, I looked at it and I thought, why am I doing this? Facebook is going to charge me to promote to people who already like the show. They've clicked like or you wouldn't be seeing it.
Right.
Preposterous. Mr. Wilde, hello.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. Brian's sitting here on Twitter, as he is wont to do.
What's he showing me?
I just retweeted you.
I can't read it from there, Brian.
Thank you, Brian.
You're welcome. I appreciate that.
See, Brian likes when I get positive. See, he enjoys that.
I also starred it.
Yeah.
you starred it?
Well, that little star there.
It's now one of your favorite tweets of all time?
I may look at it daily.
And thank you, Amy Luft. For retweeting me as well. Oh. I appreciate that. Oh, but
she's the best.
Yeah, there you go.
This thing's going to be on fire. It's going to be trending.
I think I'm going to take a more positive view on things from now on, Dave.
How about life in general, not just social media?
Just some things.
Jay, this is the...
I feel so validated now by Twitter retweets.
I thought that this was a watershed day. I used that word before when describing the world of sports and the way that society and sports have transcended... I mean, my goodness, somebody came out of the closet. A professional male athlete came out of the closet today. That seems like small potatoes compared to Jay Farrar saying he's going positive.
Yeah. I'm totally lying, by the way. Yeah.
We know that Jason Collins wasn't lying.
I was being facetious. And no, Jason Collins was not lying.
And yes, Brian.
Brian.
Three retweets.
Oh, listen to you, Brian. Wow. Can we get Brian a set of headphones so he can join in our conversation with Bugs Burnett? It's about to start right now. Let's bring him in. Richard Burnett is he's a journalist. He writes for the Montreal Gazette. You can find his Pop-Tart blog online, as well as $3 Bill. He's a gay activist, and today must be a pretty big day for you, Bugs.
It's a huge day. It's pretty exciting, I think.
How are you?
I'm not too bad, man. How you guys doing over there?
We're great. It's, you know, at days like this, woke up, saw the news, and just really excited to be able to go on the radio and talk about it tonight.
It's pretty amazing. I remember years ago... Well, you could still count all the out former players on one or two hands. And I remember there was a time when I'd interviewed all of them. And now the last couple of years, it's just, you know, it's like the domino effect. It's pretty darn cool.
Well, and what separates him from the rest, of course, is that he's still playing. He's a free agent right now, but he's still playing. And they say he's going to get picked up by a team.
I sure hope he does get picked up, because my fear is that, you know, this becomes a secondary story if he doesn't get picked up. And everybody just kind of waits and buys their time and bites their fingertips, going, when is the big superstar going to come out? So I hope this story doesn't end with this season.
Do we need a superstar to come out for this to be an actual thing? I mean, this is still the front cover of Sports Illustrated. This dominated the news cycle today. I feel like society is at its place right now where it doesn't necessarily need to be the Kobe Bryant. It can be the 12th man.
You know, yeah, it can be the 12th man, but it's kind of like all the other things that are kind of going on around the sport. You know, it's like Nike and all the possibility of corporate sponsors going, we want the gay athlete. That first gay athlete that's going to be like huge. I don't know if it's this guy, but he's going to get all these huge, super duper contracts. He's going to become a folk hero to 2, 3, 4 generations of kids, adults. And if Collins doesn't, you know, come back next season, I'm looking at who's going to be on the box of Cheerios, and who's going to get the Nike contracts, and who's going to, you know, it's that just means we're still waiting for that next person, that next athlete.
Well, and it's funny because I know that Brittany Griner signed a huge contract this week, and last week came out of the closet, but didn't have anywhere near the resonance that today's story did.
Oh man, it's only because she's a woman, and I'm so glad you brought this up. You know, there's this kind of like this kind of weird double standard thing. I mean,
really a weird double standard?
It's kind of like this old homophobic myth. You have to be tough to be an athlete, and women which means women athletes must be lesbian, and it means that male athletes can't be gay. The fact that nobody even blinked an eye when Brittany Griner came out, it really says a lot about internalized homophobia in our society. And even though we're all going crazy about Collins, I mean, why aren't we going crazy about Brittany? And it really has a lot to say with how we feel about lesbians and how we feel about gay men.
Well, Navratilova
and our relationships with such.
Richard, Navratilova came out 31 years ago. She was tweeting about that today. And the big one that I remember when I was young was Amélie Mauresmo, the tennis player. But again, it was like a shrug of the shoulders. Everybody just kind of knew that she was gay already.
You know, I mean, but, you know, Martina, my God, Martina. I mean, for me, it's like when I look at my sports icons, it's Muhammad Ali, David Kope, Martina Navratilova, Billie Jean King, and they were so far ahead of the curve. Martina Navratilova, 1981. I remember a few years ago when she was in Montreal for the Out Games, she told me that she pretty much lost all of her sponsorships. But she said to me, she says, "But at least I didn't lose my integrity." It's just such a different time and place. I'm just trying to imagine 30 years ago to be out there alone. Literally, she was alone. She's absolutely a hero of mine. She's amazing.
What was the big change, Richard, that sort of set this all so that it was suddenly socially acceptable? I mean, they talk about how in the States, 90% of Americans are for, or I think it's 70-something, but it's a huge percentage now, well over 50.
It's just a culmination of a lot of things that are happening in the mainstream culture. I mean, everything from gay marriage to, how society changed with the advent of HIV and AIDS, and how it brought a lot of sympathy. At first, while there was, you know, the HIV panic, I think at the end of the day, it brought a lot of sympathy towards the gay community, and so it helped shift attitudes and opinions. And I think now we're coming to this point where everybody knows somebody who's gay. Everybody has a friend or a cousin or an aunt or an uncle. Everybody knows somebody who is gay or lesbian. And everybody realizes, well, you know what? What's the big deal? And so here we are at the last bastion with sports. And everybody knows that there have been gay and lesbian athletes in our major leagues over the decades. But now we can talk about it. It's easy.
Got
easier.
A few minutes left on the Kaufman Show with journalist and activist Bugs Burnett. Richard, can you tell me how you felt growing up and obviously being a huge sports fan? And I don't know how long you've been out of the closet for, but I'd imagine for at least most of your adult life. And watching athletes and knowing, I'd imagine also as a journalist, that you've known that certain players were gay and that they haven't come out. And how does that feel? And take that all up to today and the feeling that you felt this morning when you heard this news.
There's nothing more liberating for a gay person than coming out of the closet. And it's something that I think straight people have a very hard time understanding, because they never have to come out. Even once a gay person comes out, and you think you're pretty obviously gay or lesbian, whatever it is, you still have to come out day after day after day to new people and stuff like that, because everybody just usually assumes that everybody is straight. So it's a never-ending process. And so when somebody makes the decision to actually come out, it is absolutely the most liberating thing that they can do. And the change it affects, even if it's just one other person, there'd be that kid out there that goes, wow, man, you know, if they can do it, I can do it. And it really is like that. I remember I was a terrified 16-year-old in the closet, and I read a book by author Edmund Wright called The Boy's Own Story. It was the first coming out novel ever written. And I happened to meet Edmund White this week, and I got to tell him about it. I said, you changed my life. So when somebody like Collins and other athletes come out and they become the heroes of these young people, it says to them, you know what, things may not be so good for you right now, but, you know, give it a couple of years, give it some time, it's going to get better, don't commit suicide, hang in there, and you can be just like me. And that's a dream. That's the Canadian dream.
Richard Burnett on the Kaufman Show in conversation with Dave Kaufman and Jay Farrar.
Richard, one of the things I noticed about today was, you know, for the most part, it seemed to be overwhelming support for Jason Collins after he made his announcement and after the article came out, which is a good thing, obviously. Is this an indication that maybe, just maybe, this could have been done a long time ago instead of now? Is it a little bit too late?
No.
Because he's not facing too much opposition here, except for one jerk on ESPN. But, I mean, you know.
Yeah, but you know what? It's kind of like, you know, if you say the N-word or the F-word now, nobody wants to, you know, to be labeled a bigot anymore. You know, nobody wants to be the typical 1960s black anti-black racist. And today, people who don't like gay people, folks who don't like gay people, you know, they're going to be careful about what they say, and so they should. You know, that this kind of language is not tolerable. It's not acceptable. However, you know, we do live in a free society, and if people want to say, you know, I think Richard Burnett is blah 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 blah, then that's fine. As long as they don't advocate violence against other people, then you can say whatever you want. However, I do believe that just because we're not hearing a lot of people saying this is terrible, blah, don't get me wrong, Those people are out there. It's just they're just keeping their mouth shut.
Finally, Richard, you've outed a few people in your day. You outed Ricky Martin. I mean, not that it was a surprise, but you outed Ricky Martin. You outed a few people along the way. Are you happy that this happened this way and that it wasn't somebody that was outed and had to deal with the backlash?
You know, and my thing about outing was I've always been very choosy about who to out. As I said, coming out, the choice for someone to come out on their own time, on their own volition, is the most liberating thing anybody can do, and I would never want to take that away from somebody. Whenever I've outed somebody, it's because they had done something I thought had set back the gay civil rights movement, and I felt that it would reinforce negative stereotypes, the shame, the myth of the shame of the closet, and that for me is politically I thought would be a mistake, and that's how come I would out somebody. But in the case of somebody like Collins, unless he said something absolutely stupid and anti-gay, there was no reason to out him. And I'm so glad that he has come to peace with his inner truth, and that he finally chose today to come out. And I hope it makes a difference in the lives of a whole bunch of other people.
Brian, you have a question for Richard?
Yeah, sure.
Can we turn on Brian's mic, please? There we go.
When do you think you'll know that you've crossed the bridge and there's been acceptance? Because for me, it comes when fans aren't picking out him.
Yeah.
Because they're going to pick him out. They're going to be evil.
I think our time will come. Our day will have arrived, I think, for gay athletes, is when 50,000 sports fans in a stadium are screaming, go, 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 Collins or whatever it is, you know, because he just, or she, you know, just scored the winning goal or whatever it is. That'll be amazing. It's kind of like buying a gay book in a bookstore. People still have a problem picking up what would be perceived as a gay title or what they think other people will perceive as a gay title and then going to the cash register, because then people are going to look at the book, then look at you and kind of do the math and go, oh, you must be gay. And if people are not gay, then they don't want to be looked at as, oh, you must be gay. It's the same thing when you're rooting for a gay athlete. I remember I was at the closing weekend, whatever it is, games at the Blue Jays last season, and their shortstop, or was it the second baseman? I can't remember his name.
Escobar,
after he had done, you know, that crazy anti-gay smudge stuff on his face. And, I mean, I was peed off. I stood up. There was like 40,000 people. I think I was the only person out of 40,000 people that stood up and booed him. And I'm like, you know, come on, you bum, blah, 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 whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I just thought, you know, you deserved to at least hear that once.
Absolutely.
And, but you know what? I bet you in that crowd of 40,000 people, there were at least another 100 people who felt the way I felt. But
more
why
than that,
did they,
I'm sure.
Why didn't they stand up? And it's just because people are scared. And because if you look like you're supporting gay people or gay rights or whatever it is, it might mean that you are gay too.
Yeah, so and that's why I mentioned that, because I think that's where the threshold is. It's right there.
Yeah.
It's right that you – that moment that you just mentioned with Escobar,
yeah,
where it's obvious that what he's done is heinous, wrong in anybody's books,
yeah,
yet you're the only one standing.
But yeah. I guess
the day when everyone's standing,
yes,
or at least half – or at least 200,
yeah,
is the
yeah
day that it all changes. And when Collins is shouted out for being a poor player instead of a poor gay player,
mm-hmm, yeah,
then that will be the day that the threshold has been crossed.
Escobar is a good example, Bugs, because Escobar was basically a fringe player last year.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't, you know, Derek Jeter. It wasn't the biggest superstar in the majors that was causing this. It was a guy that... Yeah, I mean, I think he's in Tampa Bay right now.
Mm.
He was shipped to the Marlins as part of that huge trade. And anyways, the point is he's gone and forgotten. And I think that's part of what you experienced too, because I know that when he first got back to Toronto, like whatever the first series was after he was suspended, he yeah really got a licking from the crowd.
Mm.
But you know, Collins, the concern is what's he going to be able to do in 3 minutes a game?
Yeah, and I mean, you know, he just completed his 12th season in NBA. I guess he's a journeyman player.
He's a 34-year-old vet.
Yeah, I mean, and I just kind of wonder, you know, even though he got the cover of Sports Illustrated, will anybody hire him? Will he come back? You know, even if he still has it in him, I mean, it's not like he's already signed to a team. He's negotiated with the brass, saying, okay, let's time this, blah blah blah, and all that kind of stuff. He's not signed with anybody, so I don't know if this can work for him. I don't know if it can work against him, and so if this is a story that peters out in the next 3 weeks, then we're back at square one.
There's no way. There's no way it's gonna. I think if anything, this will bring more players the confidence. Just seeing the reaction today on Twitter was unbelievable. From the president on down.
Yeah,
I don't see how this doesn't beget more openly gay athletes. I really don't.
I think on that twist, I think you're right. I think if this brings out the next active professional athlete on a major league sports team in North America to come out of the closet, well, he's still signed with the team. I think then this is one of those crucial stepping stones that we're witnessing here.
Bugs Burnett is the Twitter handle. Follow him on Twitter there. You can also read his stuff on the $3 bill and the Pop-Tart blog through the Montreal Gazette. Richard Burnett, thank you so much for your time tonight.
Thanks so much for having me on today. It's been a great day, isn't it?
Appreciate it. Yeah, really a really cool day. I'm really happy I'm on the radio today.
Cheers. Thanks, guys.
Good to talk about. It's so many days where you know, a couple of weeks ago we had the bombings, and the last thing we wanted to do was come on and talk. And look at that. Brian was here last that time, too.
Yes, he was.
See,
Brian
good,
always comes in.
Good things happen, too, when you're in studio, Mr. Wild.
Yes.
Yes.
All right, thanks to Bugs Burnett. Brian Wild is here. Francois Gagnon is downstairs. And Jimmy, I realize you can't hear, so that's why you're doing this here. Jimmy, take my headphones, Jimmy. There you go. You can do this.
Francois Gagnon,
hard for Jimmy to
plug
us in and he can't hear the music. You're very welcome, Jimmy. How are you, sir?
Everything is well, gentlemen.
Let's just all be zen here. It's a good day. We're going to be calm, okay?
Nice.
You're going to put on some music? I can't hear it, but I assume it's playing. Does it sound nice? I think it's Dave Bedini.
It's nice. It's at a good level.
It's nice. It's at a good level right
now. Yes, it is.
Everything sounds good.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm the only one here with a microphone and a headset working right now. You're off. Wild, your microphone's off right now.
All right. Let's get out before this song mysteriously ends. I don't know where we're at in the song. I don't know. It's all a mystery to me right now. But our thanks to Bugs Burnett, and we will be back to talk some Habs with Francois Gagnon and Brian Wild on The Kauffman Show. Hunter, Montreal band. I think their biggest fan is in studio with us right now, isn't he?
I am.
Hi, Brian Wild. How are you?
I'm well. Yeah, I love them. That's their second album, Montreal band. I saw them at the Montreal Folk Festival for the first time last summer. Just basically stumbled upon them. Really thought they nailed their set. Started to listen to them. Realized they had one album already out. Was surprised by that. Because you're always like, wow, how have I not heard of everybody from Montreal when you try to pay attention to it? And they just released their second album. It's even better than their first. 11 solid tracks. Not a bad one on it.
Well, we'll have to catch them in concert after the playoffs, Brian.
Yes, after the playoffs.
That's because there's too many good bands in Montreal. You cannot know them all.
Hello, Francois Gagnon.
How are you, sir?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm ecstatic.
I gave him a Coke. He's ready to go.
Yeah, that's right.
So happy.
1 liter.
1 liter.
The Glimmer Twins.
That was a little can.
5 minutes.
Yeah. The Glimmer Twins are in studio.
Happy
Jay.
When he came in and Brian handed him over the bottle of Coke. He's so happy.
Honestly,
I've never seen him so happy.
It reminded me of Mean Joe Green and the Kid.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Oh,
hey,
Francois.
Kid.
Francois loves his Coke, man.
Yeah.
I mean, he loves his Coke. You know what's so funny? Do you mind if I tell the story of how you go from Coke and then in the summer you're a totally different guy?
No problem. You
okay.
can say it.
This is hilarious because every single year, and Francois and I have been doing our little gig on CTV for 5 years,
I guess.
Yeah, about 5 years. The brainchild of Jed Gahane and Mike Paperny, and man, we've had a blast with it. But the funny thing is that Francois in the winter, pretty much every day on game day, there are like 12, 13, 14 Cokes lined up around his computer. And he really goes through the Cokes, right? And then he gains a little weight.
Yep.
And then the summer comes and he starts to play golf. He goes and he plays golf pretty much every single day because he's so passionate about that sport. He gets off Coke for the summer. And then
I walk.
And he walks the courses. And then every September I look at him and it's like, hey, who's this light guy? And then by the end of June, it's like, who's this chunky guy? And it's every year it's the same. What do you fluctuate? 20 pounds?
I would say around 15.
15, 20 pounds. Yeah. I think we all do. We all have our winter weight. I got my winter weight on now.
I'm just scared of one thing is that one day I will not fluctuate anymore.
Yeah,
I will
stay up.
No, but so much of that isn't just drinking Coke. And I want to make it clear to everybody listening that we're talking about drinking Coke.
The other one is a different kind of weight loss.
That's right. And I did that mistake once.
Yeah. I hear it's effective.
And
it is.
I don't want to know.
It is. Thanks, Jay.
Yeah.
Jay's just come
Yeah, you know, I made on Twitter, a kind of a joke with the Coke thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that there was something lost in translation there.
For sure.
And, you know, and after that, you know what Twitter is that it goes crazy.
Right.
And after 10 minutes,
well, you got 500,000 followers. For me, nothing goes crazy.
But after 10 minutes, you feel that you're restrained and everything. And the next morning, you come and say, what? You say on Twitter that you take Coke? I said, yeah, but it's Coca-Cola.
Right.
And I make sure that now I'm always complete.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
Letters,
so,
because with Twitter, with 140 characters, sometimes
you want to shorten.
Yeah, you want to shorten. That's
so when you're
Coca-Cola
taking cocaine, Francois, always finish with the cane.
Yes. Make sure they know.
Like, I have a full blown addiction to Diet Coke. So
really?
I'm okay, though.
And there is a Diet Cocaine, so you're safe.
Right, exactly. I know I'm all good.
Every cocaine is a Diet Cocaine, isn't it?
Wow.
I should think about it. I don't know that.
Home of the Habs, huh?
Yeah.
All right.
What were we talking about?
We're talking about
playoffs.
Speaking of cocaine, no, I don't know.
Something is that playoff is addictive.
Yes.
Ah, there you go. Well
done.
See, that's why we pay them big bucks.
And I think we're all excited to get that habit back in this town. This is the real season. In my mind, this is the real season, and there's nothing as exciting. Really cool to think that we're playing a team that, at least as of late last night, tickets are still available on their website.
Wow. Which means that you're kidding me.
I swear to you.
Right. Oh, wow.
But it's the reality of that market. There's,
Do you know how many Habs fans are going to be at those games
and
then?
That's perfect.
If that was open to them?
It's going to
be. For a day, you said?
Yeah,
they're still not sold out.
Brian, as of late last night, every single game, games 3, 4,
word.
And 6,
mm-hmm.
were available.
But again, this is normal for Ottawa. They have like 12,500, 13,000 season tickets. And every game day, there's still a couple of tickets to see. You come to the morning skate and there's a board. And like you're coming in and you see still 500 tickets left. So everybody tweets about that. And it's getting a way to get sold out game after game after game, but it opens the door to fans from other cities, and it's going to be interesting to see that.
Man, it's one thing to find a Montreal power and a Montreal connection for an Ottawa game in the regular season, but to have that moment in
the playoffs,
where the Sens are wondering if they're the home team in the playoffs?
Well, do you think it's price point? Or do you think? I mean,
it's
the arena.
Fans.
Look at that arena. Who wants to go to Carrefour Laval to watch a hockey game?
No, it's not the arena.
And there will be the Place Laval in a couple of years if it ever happens.
Jay, you need to head to Ottawa.
Jay,
you need to head to Ottawa because that population is 70% women. You got a shot there, buddy.
Jeez.
Wow, zing!
I went to Ottawa once, and we stopped on the corner. There was a couple of guys out in the street. We couldn't find a bar. We couldn't find a club to go to. And we're like, dude. And these are locals. You can tell they're just sitting out on the corner, just sitting there, doing nothing.
The bar.
Yeah, with a stick. He had a stick in his hand, and I'm like, dude, what is there a bar around here? Is there a club? He's like, there was an expletive at the
Jay?
End of it. Yeah, I said, where can we go? He goes, I don't know. It's just Ottawa. Beep.
Yeah.
You know, and I said, well, that answered everything. So we ended up at Nichols for some reason. And I said, that's it. Let's go home.
You're in Ottawa, baby.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I can assure you something. If you come to Ottawa next week, when I got to be there, we'll find a couple of places.
Yeah. All right.
Okay.
I'm going to take you up on that.
Yeah, but
that.
You're
I'm
in
coming.
Hull. You're going to go to Hull.
Not necessarily.
Oh, okay.
Ottawa is a much better city than it used to. You know,
it is. It has improved. My sister lives in Gatineau now. So
good choice.
Yeah.
Well, of course, look at that exciting government that's running the city right now. I mean, of course things are exciting right now.
You know, you
non-stop
use
party action conservative fun in Ottawa.
I moved from Quebec City to Ottawa to study there in 84.
Arborific.
So from 84 to 86, you know, at 8 o'clock at night in Ottawa, it was like dead and brain dead. So you had to go in Hull to have fun. But now I think that you can manage to get something open until midnight. And game nights, you know, until 1 o'clock in the morning.
I thought closing time was 2 in Ontario.
It is
now.
Still 2, yeah.
It changed.
Yeah, but in Ottawa, they just close
yeah,
early.
Yeah.
They don't even follow
nobody
the curfew.
Here, that's going home.
Yeah, exactly.
So this is the below the belt that we're all deciding to use.
Yeah,
right
let's
now.
Do it. Why, it's rivalry.
We're gonna kick Ottawa for not being as fun a town as Montreal.
No, and that's you know
oh,
what?
That's
and,
wrong. That, no, I want no part there, of that.
No, I do.
There's no better town for hockey than Montreal, obviously.
Right.
And Quebec City, when they'll be back, is going to be a bash over there also. But Ottawa in the building. It's going to be better than the Maple Leafs. It's going to be better than the ACC.
Oh, I don't know.
Oh,
really?
ACC is...
Yeah, but that... Oh, is so it going to be as corporate in the playoffs?
You mean where? In ACC?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course it is. The tickets are so expensive. And then
oh, yeah,
suddenly
that's right.
The
they
people
upped them
that
75%
go there...
They
decided
the
instead of
75%.
Spending... 75%. And instead of spending the first two periods in their luxury boxes under the seats, so beyond, you know, that those
yep.
platinum seats are always empty... They're going to show up and say, oh, that's a hockey game? So they will not even know what to cheer for. And the Leafs have been out of the playoff for so long that they don't even know what's the playoff anymore there.
See, I wonder, though, Francois, if people are going to
I don't know. I think they're pretty excited. But I agree with you. All of the fun's going to be at bars, not in the arena.
Yeah, that's
And that's so often the case right now that the way that it works, it just priced itself out of the market for the real fans. And
yeah.
In Montreal, though, as pricey as it can be or has gotten...
Mm-hmm.
That rich fan still wants to have fun.
Yeah,
oh,
but,
of course. But
the Toronto fun. Rich fun doesn't seem to want to have fun.
You have more fans wanting to have fun and appreciative of the game in the upper levels of the Bell Center than you do in
of
the
course.
Lower levels.
Of course.
And I think that speaks to just about anywhere.
Every game, Brian, you know, we're sitting on the press box and we have like 10, 15, 20 rows of fan behind
right.
us. And I could write
and
a story.
And they're all yelling his name.
I could write a story every night with what I hear from from out there. Some remarks to players that are sometimes insanely funny. Some nights not that funny, but, you know.
Usually pretty accurate, though.
You laugh at it a little bit, and it's always interesting to see that. One thing that I will really like about this matchup, you know, beside hockey. I lived in the Outaouais region for roughly 15 years. My three kids were born there. And that's where I established myself coming out of school. I found a job there. And
and you covered the Senators
I covered
when they started,
the Senators
for, Le Soleil,
when they started
right?
for Le Droit,
Le Droit.
The French paper from Ottawa.
Right.
And then I was transferred to Le Soleil in Quebec City, but I still live there. And what's going to be interesting is that every Senator fan is also a Habs fan. Just like in Quebec City before there was that first matchup in the playoffs. You see, they
but
love...
That's double the fun. They'll cheer all the goals.
That's it. But it's...
yes, 1-0. Yes, 1-1.
Well, that's what we see in regular seasons for the last 20 years. When Montreal score a goal, the fans are happy. When Ottawa wins, the fans are happy. Now in the playoff, you know, it's... Le ménage à trois is over. You need to be faithful to one team.
Right.
Because, and it's going to be interesting to see.
It's May, no more threesomes.
Well, that's not what I meant, but, you know, it's going to be interesting to see that, you know, are they still going to cherish the Habs if they really like the Senators? Or is it going to be a reverse situation? I'm an Hab fan, and I will still be a proud Hab fan, even though I'm surrounded by Senators fan. Because when there's an Ottawa goal, and that does not happen often, but when there's an Ottawa goal, fans are going crazy at the Scotiabank Place. And when Montreal score, you look in the stands and you will see fans cheer for the same both teams. And now in the playoff, it's going to be different. And I really, for the first two games over there, depending of if Montreal wins both in Montreal, if it's 1-1, it's going to be interesting to see the reaction of the fans over there.
Now, did you cover the Nordiques in 92-93?
I was not on the beat at that time.
Okay, I'm wondering if anybody remembers if there was like a cavalry of Habs fans going up the 20 to the Colisée. Like, I'm trying to think of times in the playoffs where their Habs fans have had the opportunity to travel en masse. I know the Boston series a few years back, there were tons of Canadians fans at the TD Garden in Boston.
There were tickets available in Boston, which was not the case in Quebec City because the Colisée is a smaller venue. It was roughly, 13,500, maybe 15,000 tickets over there at that time. And you know, the Quebec fans were really protective of their product and of their team, especially when it became that Quebec was better than Montreal or when they won those playoff series with the goal of Dale Hunter, and the year after or 2 years after the big goal of Peter Stastny that won the faceoff against Carbo. And Carbo talks about that goal. You know, it's one thing to lose a faceoff. It's another thing to lose the player against whom you just lost the faceoff, and he scored a winning goal in overtime. And Carbonneau swore to me that he spent the entire night after that game in the stick shed at the Forum just crying.
Wow.
He could not believe it. That's how passionate the players of those two teams were at that time. It's not like that yet against Ottawa and Montreal.
No.
There's no rivalry whatsoever between those two teams, but I think it's going to get a berth in the playoff, and it's going to be interesting to see where it will get us.
Not sure if you saw the news today, Francois, but Quebec City got a huge boost as far as NHL is concerned, because Seattle will not be getting a basketball team. At least they will not be getting Sacramento's basketball
team.
That's
right.
Which means that an arena will probably not be built, which means the NHL will not likely be going to Seattle in the near future.
That's
so
a really good
Quebec.
News. That's a really good news, because we all know the ones who have been following that story is that NHL is going to go to Seattle if and only if an NBA team gets there, because hockey will not fill the building. Basketball will fill it, and then the NHL would be in support. Now, what I heard, and I just hope it's not true, that the Bobcats could move now and go to Seattle. If that's possible, I don't know. But I know that the NHL is looking at Seattle as a market that they want to move there, because they know that they can sell for big money a team in Quebec City. So, but if there's nobody ready to receive an NHL team, then Quebec is the only one able to do it right away because of Le Colisée, and because on the other side of the parking lot, there's another Colisée who is going to, you know, we're going to see the first... They are still working on the basement.
They've
and
broken
everything.
Ground, though,
they,
right?
They broke ground, but, you know, it's not, when you go around it, it's not, you don't see, it's not, you know, out of the hurt yet.
It's right, it's all, like walking by Drummond and Gauthier in 95.
Right. Exactly. It's all underground, and they are building solidly underground, and to make sure that when it's going to come up, a team's going to be ready to get there. I hope it's going to happen. As we said during the lockout, I was at modestly optimistic or cautiously optimistic. I don't want to get over hyped by this, because, you know, I was so hurt when the Nordiques left. I was so hurt when everybody thought that Quebec would get the Winter Olympic Games in 2002. They went to Salt Lake. So, you know, since with those two events, I just want to make sure that I'm not too crazy about it. So if it doesn't happen, I will not be too sad.
I have something similar sports-wise in my life that I don't like to get too excited
That's
about.
Right.
Just so that I don't get too upset. I fully understand, Monsieur Gagnon. Brian Wilde, you've been quiet for like a minute and a half, and I'm
sorry,
concerned.
Brian. It's all
right. I'm concerned.
I was just thinking about how much Seattle in the Pacific Northwest actually loves its hockey. I think there are about 8 Western Hockey League teams within 2 hours.
Really?
Yeah, it's massive there. It's a lot more popular than people realize. They've got a team in Seattle that had a great 7-game series, losing in overtime to Kelowna. They have the Tri-City Americans, where Carey Price played. They've got the Everett team, too.
Hey, that's 15 minutes outside of Seattle.
That's 15 minutes outside. They got Portland as well.
Seattle
Spokane
could,
as
Seattle
well.
Could
and
be.
Then you've got Vancouver and...
And the Giants and Junior there, and the Canucks could become the biggest rivalry with Seattle
more
than Edmonton.
They
and
really want hockey in Seattle, but you're absolutely right. If basketball doesn't get there first, hockey will not be the one to lead the way. They want to piggyback that because it's a lot cheaper.
Sure, but it's a wonderful sports town.
It is a great sports town.
It was a wonderful sports town.
And if anybody knows the story behind how Seattle lost its basketball team, it's as sad as it gets.
Yeah, we've covered it extensively on the show. And anybody who hasn't seen the Sonics Gate documentary,
you can watch it.
Watch it for free on YouTube or check our archives.
The guy who's behind that is
we
real
spoke with him on the show.
Smart guy.
Yeah.
I forget his name.
It's Adam something or other.
He's really smart, really bright guy.
We are waiting for that person with the Montreal Expos on their heart to step forward and do the same thing. That movie needs to be made about what happened here. And it looks like Quebec City doesn't need to have that movie made. They'll get their team back without it. So that's
cool. I hope so. I mean, so much good could come out of that, you know? I mean, now we're on that path, and Francois doesn't want to get too upset about it. So maybe that's why I was being quiet a little bit. But... to not make him upset. But so much is to be gained by it. And just in our industry alone, you know, just... my confrère and hope that the jobs keep coming in this province. So much is to be gained by TVA Sport doing well instead of poorly and having a marquee franchise to be behind it. It would just be massive.
You really would. You're listening to the home of the Habs, and when we come back after the break, we're going to talk a lot of Habs with Francois Gagnon and Brian Wilde in studio on the Kauffman Show. Brian does too.
Wilco.
Yes.
Awesome. You ever hear them with Billy Bragg?
That's what this is from.
Oh, fantastic.
Billy Bragg and Wilco from Mermaid Avenue.
Mermaid Avenue, yep. Great album.
Killer band.
I can't hear a damn thing.
Check your ears, Farrar.
Okay.
Loser.
So Jimmy puts up the volume. I'm kidding, Jimmy.
What do you like, Jay?
What do I like?
Yeah.
I like music from every genre. I just,
oh, brother.
I know it's stupid. Yeah, you know what? Yeah.
He's being positive.
I caught myself. I'm trying to be positive today, Brian.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I retweeted your positivity.
Thank you. I'm not going to argue with you.
It's up to three and two stars.
Yes, great. I'm not going to argue with you about moments of silence at hockey games anymore. I'm just going to try to be positive.
Why, how'd that go for you in the following 2 weeks? Poorly, I imagine. I got more support.
I got more support.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's right.
I think that's a reflection on you,
Wilde. All kinds
Wilde.
Of people getting in touch with Jay to offer their thoughts and prayers
yeah,
to him.
Yeah, that's right.
What I like...
phony ones.
In music, you guys probably wouldn't want to hear. So.
Go on. Just say a band or two.
Come a band on. Or two?
Yeah, well, that's what people want to hear.
Well,
I'll
go from Pink Floyd to...
Okay, good, fine.
Wu-Tang Clan to Ice Cube to Luciano Pavarotti. It depends on what it is. I am so cultured.
Do you notice he didn't mention his brother?
Huh?
Are you going to mention
your
brother?
Yeah, he was going to say Pavarotti and Slade.
Yeah. Yeah, he's right up there.
Not pandering at all.
You know, Floyd, Slade, Zeppelin, you know, the classics.
Wow. Well, I thought you were going to go with Suicidal Tendencies. I feel like that's the band
that suicidal
always comes
tendencies.
Up when we talk music.
Yeah, one of my favorite bands. They're a kind of a heavy metal, punk, funk type amalgamation of music. I don't know.
It's punk different. Funk.
Kauffman never plays any of my music.
Oh, it's the Kauffman show.
Yeah, I know. I know. He doesn't allow me to play any of my music. I had one opportunity at it, and I milked it for everything it was worth.
Yeah, that's right. You guys went to break every 30 seconds, right?
And a lot of the music I listen to can't really be played on the air on a mainstream radio station.
But
so
you played opera that night.
I did play
I
opera that night.
I remember being very impressed.
Yes, I did.
And, and Francois?
I'm stuck in the... late 70s. Genesis for me, like...
okay, that's good, though, Genesis.
I can listen to Supper's Ready like 10 times in a week, and I don't, you know, and...
Pink never get Floyd, sick of it.
No, never. And for me, music is has to bring me in a state of mind where I was. I use music as, oh, that was a great party, that was
sure.
a great year, that was a great summer. So I'm not really open to
I cried a lot then. I cried less then.
Sort of.
That was a really sad time.
And it's funny because, you know, once in a while you just get a crazy idea and you go back and you Google a song or something and, wow, it's right up there. And you know, I don't know if maybe you guys ever never heard about that, but
oh no, for sure. There's a band music called, and nostalgia is, I mean, they're so
Triumvirat, Spartacus from Triumvirat. I don't know if you know that. That's
no.
That's a,
say it as if we were English.
Well, Triumvirat, I guess it would be, and
Spartacus.
That's right.
Ah, okay.
You know that one?
No, I don't.
Isn't it's, that a, like a really a raunchy ball, television series?
That's Caligula.
No,
there's a show called Spartacus.
Oh, it's just terrible. People love it. Don't get me wrong, but it's just terrible.
So just before that, our listeners are think that I'm that crazy. If you go there on Google, that's a great album.
Uh-huh.
It's a it's kind of the music in the 70s, a lot of electronic in it, and the cover is a light bulb with a rat in the middle of it. And you have a couple of things like that. It's
that's what we'll look for on our vinyl.
Francois being stuck in the late 70s.
When we go to the record store and flip through the vinyl,
that's right.
We'll look for the rat and the light bulb.
When you hit the rat with the light bulb, stop.
Then find your turntable and enjoy.
And enjoy.
Well, that explains the whole Coke thing, doesn't it? Being stuck in the late 70s.
I knew I was opening a can of worm here.
Well, I'll tell you, anyway. There's only one person in this room that has a vote for the NHL Awards.
Yes.
And we're going to stop making fun of him right now.
Yes, we will.
I'm open for that. I'm open for criticism.
Francois Gagnon with La Presse is with us this evening. So is Brian Wilde from CTV. But Brian Wilde doesn't have a vote. So, no. It's okay,
Brian. I voted
voted on The Voice.
Oh, really?
So that's my own ballot.
Okay.
50 cents a call.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Called a lot. I really like her. I'm lying.
I don't know.
I don't watch it. Yeah, it's just being funny.
I'd name a candidate.
I just wanted to have a ballot, too, and participate. Yes. That's all.
Well, you can vote for the Coffin Show and the Best of Montreal through Cult Montreal on the podcast.
Oh, is that where that happens now? Yeah, the Cult Montreal, now that the mayor
right
is done?
Now. Yeah. So okay. You and I'll tell all your friends.
Okay.
Cool.
Hey, Francois. Done.
All right, Francois. I feel like I'm dragging this out longer than it needs to be. So obviously, you gave PK Subban the Norris, right?
I gave him my second vote.
Oh.
Give him your first vote.
I give my first vote to Christopher Letang.
Wow.
I gave my third vote to Ryan Suter. I gave my fourth vote to Alex Pietrangelo from the Blues. And I went for a sentimental vote with the fifth, with François Beauchemin, because of his plus 23 or plus 27.
With Sheldon Surrey.
Yeah, with Sheldon Surrey, mm-hmm. Which is, you know, an accomplishment by in sense, because Sheldon has never been that great.
No, but that's an incredible, that's the partnership that turned the Ducks around to give them a season no one expected.
Completely. And, you know, there's different reasons why I vote for Beauchemin. First of all, because I think he deserves it. But on the other hand, you know, we have to remember that he could be playing for the Montreal Canadiens. Not only once was he here, he was drafted here and then lost in the ballotage, which is the waiver draft, you know, when he went down to Columbus and then after that to Anaheim. And he was ready to sign here a couple of summers ago as a free agent. And Bob Gainey, in his great wisdom, decided to go with Yaroslav Spashek.
But this was your fifth pick.
That was
which means
fifth.
I feel like we're burying the lead a little bit here, Francois.
Yeah, no problem.
you did not name PK Subban.
No, I did not name
Norris.
PK, and I got a lot
and
of criticism.
And you write for a Montreal newspaper.
Yes, but, you know, let's reverse this thing. If PK was playing in Pittsburgh and Christopher was playing in Montreal,
mm-hmm.
and I did not vote for Christopher, would I get criticized? I think so. And because in my mind, Christopher is not that much better than PK, because PK had some great strides this season, but I still think that he has a little bit of an edge over him, and that's the reason why. I feel I'm not bound, because I work in a Montreal paper, to pampered the Montreal Canadian players.
No, I think it's important to point that out, though, because so many people have that preconceived notion.
That's right. I received today on Twitter somebody who said, anybody who doesn't vote for PK Subban should not vote. Well, I'm sorry, we're not in North Korea here. I'm allowed to do whatever I want, and I may be right, I may be wrong, but it's going to be interesting to see where it's going to happen, because for people who don't understand the voting system, we have five choices for the Hart, for the Norris, for the Selke, for the Calder, for the Lady Bing, and all those votes are going to an accountant firm in New York, and they get the greater number of votes for all the candidates, and the first top three goes into the final, and then you have the two finalists at the end. So do I think that PK is going to be in the top three? Yes. Do I think that he will get some number one votes? I sure think so, because he deserves it. But, you know, I made a judgment call here, and it doesn't mean that next year he's not going to be the number one. Or if Carlson's back and he's playing like he did last season, maybe he's going to get there. But I think that there's nothing wrong by saying that I preferred Christopher Letang on my first ballot. He's still second in the NHL. It's quite good in my mind.
Okay, so we're with François Gagnon. He's giving us his NHL picks. He's explained to us that he's not kowtowing to the Montreal pressures that be. He has named PK Subban as the second best defenseman in the NHL this year. And based on everything I just said, obviously Gallagher for the Calder, right?
I did vote for Gallagher.
Oh, you're kidding me. Okay.
No, I didn't. And you know what? I was looking at all the other names, and there were some...
I should have gone with Price for Vezina, just a point.
Vote for Vezina. Vezina's okay. Vote are GMs, and the Jack Adams is all our colleagues from the TV and radio broadcasters.
Okay.
Those are voting for the Jack Adams, which is the coach of the year, and the Vezina trophy is the general manager's. Now, for the rookie of the year... You know, I was looking at this, and I've been completely baffled by the energy of Gallagher and the fact that for a rookie, he's been pulling David Desharnais and Max Pacioretty for the last 20 games. Well, maybe not the last 20 because he played the last two or three with Eller and Galchenyuk, but he's been the best player on that line for a while. And to see a rookie doing that is amazing for me. I really like Brandon Saad from Chicago, who I gave my second vote. I think that Jonas Brodin in Minnesota is a great defenseman, doing a great job there. Jonathan Huberdeau put some numbers on, just like Neil Yakupov. But I think, and I may be wrong, that it's always easier to get points and goals with teams that are out of the playoff, and you have no pressure to be a team player and a defensive player. So for me, it was tougher for Gallagher, Galchenyuk, and Saad to have some great season than for Huberdeau and Yakupov. And Yakupov had, what, almost a third of his point in the last month, which gave him the player of the month, and that's fine for me. But I didn't give him a rookie of the year ballot for that.
I think Gallagher stands out all the time, even when he's not putting points on the
that's
board.
Right.
When you watched the game, his intensity, his drive to the net, his ability to get it under the opponent's skin at times, he's just noticeable all the time. And I think if anybody's giving their vote and watching the game, you can't help but notice him. Whereas a fella like Huberdeau, for instance, he can do almost nothing all game.
That's right.
And then do something, and he's got his point. But essentially, to watch him, you haven't seen him much. Whereas Gallagher's in your face, you're noticing him all the time.
He's going to be such a treat to watch in the playoffs.
Yeah. He is. You know what?
Well, we'll see. We'll see.
That type of play, though, Brian.
Yeah,
totally...
I know what you're saying, but I'll tell you what. Don't ever forget how much rookies are absolutely stunned by the intensity of playoffs.
But can we cross our fingers for a Claude Lemieux type performance?
He strikes me as a guy like that. He strikes me as a guy because he feigns youthful ignorance. He's not thinking when he's out there. It seems like he's just having a good time, and ignorance is bliss. Sometimes the guys who are thinking too much, the guys who are really just thinking about what they're doing, it really gets to them, especially in hockey like that. And I think he's just going to cruise right through the playoffs and just have a good time. He reminds me a lot of Shane Corson in that way.
And at this time of the night, I can say it because it's my column tomorrow in La Presse. In my mind, for Gallagher, Galchenyuk and Heller to be stellar in the playoff against Ottawa in the first round,
they
need from Plekanec and Desharnais line to be on the ice and to play.
Yeah.
Because if Paul McLean looks at the teams and he goes behind the bench and he says, well, Plekanec's line, we don't mind anymore. They're not there tonight. And Desharnais is and Pacioretty are staying on the boards. They're not going to the net. So take care of the kids. Then he's going to put his great defensive system and his great defensive players against them, and they'll be able to contain him. For that line to be that good in the playoff means that the other kids veterans need to be better, and they have not been good in the last 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah. François, let's get your MVP. Let's get the Hart Trophy, and then we'll talk about the Habs in the 20 minutes or so we have left and your expectations for them.
First thing first, Hart Trophy is for the most valuable player. Not for the best player of the league.
To his team.
Yeah, to his team. Yeah. So if I would have vote for the best player in the NHL, I would have gave my five ballots to Sidney Crosby.
Mm-hmm.
My problem with Crosby, he missed games, and the Pittsburgh Penguins won without him.
Right.
Without Malkin, without James Neal. So there's a team behind there. He's the greatest player of all, but he's not on my top three ballot because of that. I gave my number one ballot to John Tavares because I think that without Tavares, the Islanders are not even close of the playoff spot. I think that he's that difference maker. Would Matt Molson be in the top five or top 10 scorers in the NHL if it was not of because of John Tavares? I don't think so.
Well, it's like Kevin Stevens playing with Lemieux, right?
Well, some sort of kind of thing like that, you know. So that's why I put him right there. I put Jonathan Toews as a second in front of Patrick Kane because I think that Toews is the cornerstone of that team. I went to Chicago when they were in that winning streak. I watched two games over there, and he's brilliant. In every aspect of the game, he is brilliant. Number three pick was Alexander Ovechkin because the resurgence of Ovechkin brought the Washington Capitals to the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So there you have the MVP situation. I gave my fourth vote to Antti Niemi, goaltender from San Jose, and I gave my fifth vote to Crosby because I had to scratch the name of Sergei Bobrovsky because I've never voted for the MVP award. I never gave a vote to a player which team was not in the playoff.
Oh.
So would Bobrovsky go to the playoff in the last game Saturday, he would have been on my ballot as number two, right behind Tavares. But because the Columbus Blue Jackets missed the playoff by this much, I respected my philosophy and I said, sorry, man, you'll probably win the Vezina.
Even though the guy meant more to his team, arguably, than other guys on that list.
Yes, but there's so many guys that for me, like the pinpoint in this season was you need to play at least 35 games. That was the first thing. Second thing, you need to be in the playoff. And, you know, that's my ruling. I don't know what Pat's ruling is or my colleagues' rulings are. Mm-hmm. I think we all have our way to look at things, and that's fine with me.
And it's open to interpretation,
and it's open to interpretation. Of course it is.
I wish they would change the name of that. The most valuable player to your team.
The Brian Wilde Award for Excellence?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Just if it's the most outstanding player, it's you just look at the ice and say, who's the best player on the ice?
Okay, well then...
And all over the league, and it becomes a very easy award.
Well,
because it's actually become quite a complex award because of looking at it in the way you do, which is the way they ask you in the NHL to look at it.
That's right, but...
In the description of the award, they say most valuable player to his team. Mm-hmm. So if Francois is going to honor what the NHL has asked him to vote for, he has to vote for John Tavares.
That's what
because how do you vote for Sidney Crosby?
But then
they win all their games without him.
Yeah, but there's an easy way to deal with that, and I'm
have
taking,
a most outstanding.
That's
player
right.
Award.
I'm taking the idea of Bob.
Who's the best player in the world award? Sidney Crosby.
No, right. Yeah, that's right, and that's the Bob McKenzie philosophy. And I, because Bob said on the air that he would go with Crosby, and I understand his reason. Now let's make the Jean Béliveau or the Wayne Gretzky Trophy or the Mario Lemieux Trophy, and you give that to the best player in the NHL.
Yeah, but then that leads to everything. A very weird moment at the NHL Awards when the guy who's the best player in the league is standing next to the guy who means the most to his team.
Well, for me, there's a difference.
And explain that one at an arbitration hearing in the summertime.
Well, that I...
Well, the difference is you can get a most outstanding player award.
I've got character.
Yeah, well, you can give it to a guy on a team that didn't make the playoffs.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So,
I mean, there's a rule,
yeah,
right?
That's a great point.
You know,
because Francois's right, you're never going to vote for a guy who didn't make the playoffs because everybody's going to say, how valuable can he be? They didn't even make the playoffs.
Has the MVP never, because in baseball it happens.
You know what? It
last
happens.
Place,
well,
Andre Dawson
at one point you had like one team make the playoffs.
Was it in 2002 when
Rangers? Thank you, Jimmy.
It happens with 2002. Remember, José Théodore got the Vezina and the...
And the Hart.
And the Hart.
Right.
And he won by this margin in front of Jarome Iginla, from the captain
and
from
Patrick
the Calgary
Roy.
Flames. And that year, I remember, I didn't vote for Iginla. It was not on my top five ballot because the Flames were not in the playoff.
Okay.
And it probably cost him the award if there were like 15 or 20 guys. What I mean is that if you had 50 guys around, we are around 300 who vote. So if there were 20 guys who was using the same philosophy as I am.
No, but a lot less than that, because
Brian,
if I'm not
the
mistaken.
The Camilleri and Iginla used to
talk
about.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Oh, that friend's wrong. No, but I mean, you're absolutely right. If I remember both the Vezina that year, because Patrick Roy was also with Theodore that year, and the Hart were, if I'm not mistaken, the closest votes in
that's
the
right.
history of the award.
Which is.
So I had to mess it up for the.
Hey. I make a living out of that.
But it's just, it's weird to think that, you know, you can be the best player in the league, but as a product of
just
bad general managerial skills, or, you know, the
why? Because your team won all the time?
Or because your team stunk.
Yeah. Because, listen, if we have hockey fans listening to us in Winnipeg, they could say that Andrew Ladd was probably the most valuable player to his team, and you compare him to 25 other guys in the NHL, and he would be right up there. But the Jets were not there, so I didn't vote for him.
Who's the most valuable player on the Montreal Canadiens?
That's a great question. I think that it's P.K. Subban. Okay, I was asked this morning on a French radio show, give your three stars of the year to Montreal Canadiens players, and I gave my first star, and I just made fun of it. My first star is a tandem, Therrien and Bergevin.
Fair enough.
My second star was P.K. Subban, and my third star were Gallagher and Galchenyuk.
Okay.
So I played it that way. And no, Carey was not in the top three, but I still think he's the number one goaltender, and I still think he's a lot better than all the people that are bashing over his head are trying to make us believe.
Let's see them stop a puck, right?
Well, yeah.
Brian?
P.K. Subban.
Okay.
It's not really close. I mean, if you got a leading scorer, one of the top goal scorers, fantastic on the PK, power play, everywhere. I mean, he dominates. He dominates. It's not even close, really.
But in order for the Canadiens to make a deep run and to, you know, have this be a successful
ice time,
playoffs,
almost 30 minutes.
Does it come down to Subban or does it come down to Price?
It can't come down to just one. It can't, ever.
I think this town proves that it can come down to just a goaltender.
No, it can't. It can't because
Cam always ride the hot goalie. It's
Pardon?
Not, you know, not everybody's going to be Cam Ward or Yaroslav Halak, you know?
No.
That's one thing they put way too much. You're only as good as your team in front of you. You got to make the stops
if
when you need
have
them.
A solid defense and you are able to, with the system and that solid defense, take out of the equation 10 five-star shots, then the goalie's got a chance. Most goalies at this level, there's not too much between goalies if you give them a chance from the quality of shot to save them. If you're going to leave Carey Price alone to face 15 10-footers, he's going to be just as lousy as the next guy. Right. But if you defend well in front of him, Carey Price has just as good a shot at it as anyone.
As much as I agree with you, there's one thing here, though, is that the Montreal Canadiens can win a game even though PK is not stellar, even though the first two lines are not good, and even though they are not playing a good game, if the goaltender steals a game.
This is always true.
If all the other players in the team are playing a great game, and the goaltender, whoever name he is, if the goaltender is mediocre, the team will lose.
I think, though, what we always do when we get into this discussion is we always speak in absolutes.
Of course, if
the goalie has to be either stellar, steal a game, or crap and lose the game. As if there are only those two choices, and that's the absolute scenario we always create. The truth is far from that. A goalie who's having a bad night or a goalie who is having an exceptional night, the stealing part is extremely rare. Yaroslav Halak in 2010 is the last time that I can remember that a goalie just flat out stole it. 52 shots, game 6 against the Washington Capitals. It doesn't happen very often, people.
Well,
it happens, Brian, always talk about it like it happens every second game.
If it happens,
it doesn't happen.
It doesn't happen for 16 games. I think that's the point. It can happen. You can have a hot goalie who can steal you a game
or two. He can steal you a game, and he can blow a game every once in a while, but it's just so rare a goalie absolutely blows a game for
Even
you.
Even in that series, he was pulled one game.
Sure.
And they put Price in.
And it's so rare, too, that a guy will steal it over and over and over again. I mean, we talk about it all the time. I hear it on talk radio. I see it on Twitter. We talk about it like it's such a common occurrence. It almost never happens.
That's right. That's right.
It's one of the great fallacies that we talk about all the time that makes me just cringe. Like, oh, well, if Carey steals it. Goalies don't steal it. They don't steal it. A great one is 9-3-0. A good one is 9-2-0. A bad one is 9-1-0 in a save percentage. That's 91 to 92 of 93 of 100. It's not like a great goalie's got a 9-30 and the bad goalie's like, my save percentage is 3-12. Oh, I let another one in.
It's a good batting average. Good batting average.
No, but I'm just making the point.
Great.
It's over 100 shots. The guy saved 92.
Yeah.
Or that other guy saved 93. We act like the disparity is 500 to 940.
Mm-hmm.
It's infinitesimal. There's very little stealing. There's very little blowing completely. Like when Carey Price struggled in the last 2 weeks. He struggled. We'll all admit it, that he struggled. He made himself, for me, look small. He stopped being a big goalie.
That's right.
Okay. He'll work it out. He'll be fine. He'll be pretty close to the same goalie, 915, 920. That's his lifetime percentage. He'll end up at around there in these playoffs.
And that's my next question, Brian. Do you think that the last two games, the Winnipeg game and the Toronto game, alleviated the concerns for management and for the team itself?
I would have liked to have seen Carey play the last game.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not too sure what the protection of him on that last game was. Budaj played well, but I don't think Budaj needed to get himself ready. I don't think Budaj needed to see the net again to say to himself, okay, I feel ready to step in if all goes poorly. I would have liked to seen Carey play a third game there. They had pretty much achieved what they needed to. Wasn't like he was tired, I don't think.
No.
So.
He's not injured or anything, is he?
No, he's not.
No, I don't think so.
He's
no.
not. And what I didn't like in that decision, it was a defensive decision.
And
I understand it. And he made some really good saves in Winnipeg. He was, as Michel Therrien said, he found out his, he said, repère in French would be, he recognized himself in front of the net. He was able to find, his views of the puck and everything. And that's okay with me. But in Toronto last Saturday, the PK was outstanding. The forecheck was outstanding. Physical aspect of the game, Montreal never backed in front of the Toronto Maple Leaf. And the only thing was that Price was not on the ice to make sure that he would get ready. And the reason why he was not there, because Michel Therrien didn't want to happen to Price what happened to James Reimer. And I understand that. But, on the other hand, I'm a more aggressive type of person. And my number one, I want him to be on the ice. I don't want to protect him. I want him to go forward. And it's going to be interesting to see what it's going to be on Thursday, especially with the two more days of rest or preparation. Is that going to be good? Is that going to be bad? I don't know. But I'm still in Carey Price corner. And I say to all the people who are looking at number that sometimes number are deceiving. Goaltenders want to have 35, 37, 38 shots if they are not that difficult. Because if you only face 13, 15, or 16, and you give two goals, even though they are good goals, your save percentage is going to be atrocious. And if you give two bad goals, but you still have 39 shots, and out of their 39 shots, there was only five scoring chances, you'll be fine, and the number is going to be good.
I like, as stats go for goalies, save percentage a lot more than goals against average. I think goals against average is kind of useless because, for me, that just says mostly about how good your team is. The St. Louis Blues goalies, for me, if you put Elliott on another team, he's not putting in numbers like that. I mean, that St. Louis team defends like they're unbelievable how they defend.
It's like a win-loss record for pitchers.
Yeah.
It's deceiving.
It can be because it's a lot about run support, right? Mm-hmm. We've seen guys with great ERAs and had really lousy win-loss records.
Of course.
I like save percentage a lot more.
That's right.
As
a
stat.
Random expo.
Eight and six.
Sorry.
I like save percentage a lot more as a stat. But even with that said, that save percentage as a stat is so much incumbent upon the quality of shot.
Of course it is. Mm-hmm.
So even then, it doesn't really stand out as a shot.
But I noticed you, Brian, that you seem to support a lot of the new metrics in hockey, and you've embraced this. It's slow going, but I see. I mean, you talk a lot about Andrew Berkshire's stuff on Twitter and the Habs Eyes on the mm-hmm. Prize. And I know, honestly, I have not delved into it yet the way that I should. I'm still learning a lot of the baseball stuff, but I understand its importance. And I know there's the Fenwick and the Corsi. All these different ways of more accurately looking at.
Well, I don't
know.
They're different ways. I'm not too sure about where they stand. I mean, I like them, and they're fun to look at, but they're so...
Well, they're better than, plus-minus, let's say.
Yeah, but they're still pretty obscure. I mean, how much do you think the GMs of the NHL are looking at these things?
I would guess they're starting.
Well, plus-minus is a really deceiving thing.
I mean, is this Billy Ball?
Money Ball, but yeah, I think so.
Billy Ball.
Billy Ball. Billy
Bean.
Billy
Bean. Completely different movie. Completely different movie.
Sorry.
But plus minus, as we see it on NHL scoring sheets, are for goals scored if you're on the ice or if you give a goal. Many teams, plus minus is, do we get a scoring chance when you are, or do we give a scoring chance?
Mm-hmm.
Whatever
wow.
happens. That's the way they look at it. So, it's not only because sometimes if you're on the ice and the goalie gives a bad goal, Well, it's not your fault necessarily. And if the goalie saves you because you made a big mistake, then it's not a minus. And in the mind of the coach, it's a huge minus because mm-hmm. you gave mm-hmm. a great scoring chances to the opponents. So many teams now, the way they do plus and minus is that if we get a good scoring chance, you get a plus. If your line gives a good scoring chance, you get a minus, and that's the way they see it.
We've got a couple of minutes left with Brian Wild and Francois Gagnon here on the Kauffman Show. I want to take a call. We've got Brian from NDG waiting on the line, and then I want to get both of your predictions for the playoffs.
Okay.
Those are always fun. Hello, Brian. Welcome to the Kauffman Show.
Yeah, hi. You know, you brought up the question of who's the MVP this year. You know, I guess if you want to define who's most responsible for the turnaround in this team this year, maybe PK, but not quite. He probably will be. And maybe Carey, not quite. He probably will be. I think more than anybody else, the person most responsible for the turnaround in the team this year is Jeff Molson, for the changes he made that instituted a whole new way of thinking or a whole new philosophy in this team.
Yeah, I couldn't disagree with that, Brian. Thank you for the call. I mean, he definitely changed the culture of the franchise. It's about winning right now. There seems to be a standard that had escaped the franchise for too long. too long. All right, so we've got a few minutes left with you guys. And again, I want to thank you so much for...
It's always a pleasure.
It's really fun to have you guys in studio. Francois referred to Brian as his professional twin
to me
this week. And I like that. I thought that was really cool.
I need it.
I referred to Francois as that guy that I always throw to.
Well, you know, it's easy to hit the ball when the ball is given to you. So let's put it this way.
Well, who wants to do the honors? I'd like to get both of your predictions for the playoffs and for the Canadians.
I'll go first.
That's perfect, because that way when you're done, you can throw to Francois.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Okay, then I'll go Francois. I'll tell you what. For me, I wouldn't be surprised at all if this goes to overtime in Game 7, and it might be the fourth or fifth game that goes to overtime. I see so much overtime, and I see this being so tight. These two teams concentrate on defense and system, both of them. That's what they worry about. They're not high-scoring teams. Montreal scores more, of course. But Ottawa concentrates on system and D, and they don't score that much. There's going to be four goals probably per game, and then they're going to split that fifth one, and it'll probably be an overtime when they split it. And they'll split the first four, too. So 5 OT, and it'll go maybe OT in the seventh, too. And then, well, you're just throwing out a word at that point who gets that last break, right? So why the hell, I'm from Montreal, I'll throw out Montreal, but I could just as easily throw out Ottawa if they're that close. Because they are that close, and they will be. But the one thing that you have that... you can't look at the regular season at all is Erik Karlsson. Here's a guy who's going to be on the ice for 30 minutes a game before overtime starts, and he wasn't there for the last time they played, which was like 22 games ago. So we don't really have a good look at them from the past, from what we've seen to what the future looks like. But when you put in a Norris winner who looks fantastic, I mean, unbelievable considering the injury he suffered on the Matt Cook
play. He looked good against Boston, didn't he?
He's fantastic. And, I mean, that's a marquee player, you guys. And they got to where they did without him, and they got to where they did without the goalie for a lot of the season. So you have to give them props and look at his return as vital. And if there's a shock, I'll go for Ottawa to pull it off, not Montreal. Like, if it's not close, if you're like, wow, I thought that was going to be close, it wasn't, it will be Ottawa that means that it's not close, not Montreal. And it'll be Karlsson that everybody goes, oh, wow, who thought he was worth that much? Because he is worth that much.
Throw to your buddy.
Francois, what do you think? How do you see the series?
I see it as a great match. I'm really happy for it. You know, of course... You know, I always had fun with the fact that I talk about the Sens as my Sens, and now I cannot say it because they are in playoff against Montreal. But for the people who are listening to us and going to watch those games, you will have Subban on one side, you have Karlsson on the other side, you have Markov on one side, you have Gonchar on the other side.
Oh, my goodness.
You have Anderson, you have...
Oh, my goodness.
You have Gallagher and Galchenyuk. You have Zilferberg, and you have Zibanejad.
Okay, that was less. Oh, my goodness.
They're almost double-gangers, even Neil and Prest.
Neil and Prest.
Yeah.
Same type of players.
Oh, my goodness.
That's exactly where I was going. You have two teams that are alike, two coaches that are great behind the bench that can adjust. I think it's going to be long, but it cannot go to seven.
Why?
Because
why?
If it goes
why?
To seven, Montreal will win, and my prediction is Ottawa in six.
Why will Montreal win in a game seven?
Because the Forum, because the the Bell Center, because the fans, because
Forum,
the scene.
Really?
I'm sorry.
Bless
no, but do you really think that the home ice in a game seven, when they've proven themselves to be that close?
I think game seven is the least. I think that the only time when the ice home ice advantage means something is in game seven. That, for me, is the only time.
I think if they're that close and they haven't separated themselves by that point, it will reminisce 2011 when the Bruins won the Cup and Plekanec shot it at net and Michael Reiner decided he was a goalie.
Yeah.
And so it went to overtime and then Nathan Horton scored. That's and it was right. that close. I see that again. That's
who,
what I see.
Who won the Cup Boston. That year?
The Boston Bruins.
Yeah, it could be, but I hope not. Too many play overtimes because my deadline is still 11.
And I'm on the air at 11:45.
I still have some time, and I'll join you there, and I will be happy to.
Not so twinish anymore, you two, huh?
I love it when games go to overtime. It's less sitting around before I finally get on the air.
Guys, I want to thank you so much. This was a blast as always, and you are both always welcome on the Kaufman Show. It's great to have
you. See you next Monday.
No,
I'm kidding.
Okay. Anytime, guys.
No, I'm not even in town. No,
next Monday will be in Ottawa. Yeah. Join us there.
Well, perfect. You guys are call us on speakerphone from a local establishment.
From the corner of Nichols.
I will have had my half a beer and drunk, and Francois will be on his 32nd and looking at me like, Brian, what's wrong with you? You're the worst drinker ever.
Play me some music, Jimmy. Bring it in soft and slow this time. Yeah, you gave me a heart attack, you. There we go. Good stuff. Could have heard this at the... was it the El Rey? The Little Stones did a surprise gig on a couple of nights ago in L.A. 700 people, $20 a ticket.
Wow.
Yeah, wouldn't that be something? They played this. They played all the... They did a B-sides concert. The kind of show I would love to see. Probably the kind of show you were treated to if you went to see the Blushing Brides at Club Soda on Friday night. This is the Kaufman Show, and as much as I wish I could kidnap Francois and Brian and keep them here and bring them back to you every Monday, we got to let them go back to their real jobs and real lives, but we'll be following along. Be Wild CTV for Brian on Twitter, Gagnon Francois for Francois on Twitter. Watch Brian on TV and support those newspapers, people. Go pick up a copy of La Presse.
Thanks a lot.
La Presse Plus.
La Presse Plus
for
iPad.
Free. That's right. We'll be back on the Kaufman Show with Max Kerman from the Arkells. This is The Kaufman Show. You can reach me on Twitter at The Kaufman Show. My lovely, talented co-host, Mr. Jay Farrar.
I'm lovely.
And talented.
Thank you.
J-Pub Radio.
At J-Pub Radio.
John Kakalakis just brought you that sports update, and he's at John K. Sports, and Jimmy's still stuck in the rotary phone age. We'll get you there eventually, Jimmy. You will get to the top of that mountain, and the first person you follow will be Max_Kerman. Or Arkell's music, whichever one you feel. I don't know if you're feeling like more basketball or dancing shoes, depending on which one you want to follow. But Max is our next guest. It's been a while. He was touring Europe with his band, the Arkells. But he's back in North America and loving every second of these NBA playoffs. And we're going to talk a little hoops with Max. Hello, sir.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you, buddy?
Good. Yeah, it feels good to be home.
I bet. Well, especially timed perfectly with round one of the NBA playoffs.
Yeah, actually, I was looking at our touring schedule, and I saw we'd be back on April 16th, and that's, I think, the first day of the playoffs, so they worked out great.
Do you ever actually try to, no, I don't want to play that day, we've got a softball game that day, something like that?
You can't really do that with shows, but with practices, like, for instance, we're getting together tomorrow, but I have a Tuesday night pickup run in Dundas, Ontario, that starts at 8, so practice will be over by 7:30. I haven't told the guys that's the reason, but now they know.
Well, yeah, they're all wrapped listening right now, driving around Hamilton listening to the Kaufman Show.
Right.
So let's start with, for me, one of the most exciting things thus far has been this Brooklyn-Chicago series. Watched a triple overtime game on the weekend.
Yeah, it was a silly game. I mean, anytime Nate Robinson plays like he's Michael Jordan, it's a news story, you know. Nate Robinson's one of those guys that I think for a lot of people is like infuriating to watch because he can do something so incredible. You know, he could dunk over someone who's literally a foot taller than him, and then the next minute he'll get a technical foul or, you know, throw up a really stupid three-pointer. But, yeah, there was just magic in the air on Saturday. And, you know, the Bulls, who everyone expected to not really have much of a fighting chance in the playoffs, was good. I know they didn't win tonight, but I'm happy about that series and the Golden State series for actually being interesting because the other ones have been all pretty lopsided so far.
Well, the Golden State series has been fantastic. I mean, first of all, it's so rare to be cheering for Golden State in the playoffs, but how about Steph Curry?
Yeah, it's great. You know, I think everyone around the league says that the Bay Area basketball fans really know their stuff and they're really passionate, but they just haven't had a real team to root for the last year, probably decade, with the exception of that run they made in 2006 when they upset Dallas. But yeah, Steph Curry is like such a likable player. Like when you see the way Mark Jackson, the head coach of Golden State, talks about him, and the rest of his teammates, they're all just sort of in awe and laughing when he's able to throw up a three-pointer from about 40 feet out and it just like, yeah, hits nothing but net. And, you know, I think a lot of people counted them out. David Lee, who's probably their second-best player, he got injured in, I think, the first or second game. And Denver has been really good the last half of the season. But they have him on the ropes. And I think it's great because Curry is one of those guys that people are always, you know, I think underestimating. And he constantly overachieves, whether is it Davidson in the NCAA tournament a few years ago or now just like becoming a premier all-star. He just sort of goes above and beyond everybody's expectations.
Speaking of on the ropes, Max, 3-0 in the series. Oklahoma leads Houston right now. Game four and a third quarter wrapping up. Houston has a 10-point lead right now on OKC, but I mean, this kind of looks like a fait accompli. Everybody had really good vibes about the Thunder going into the playoffs this year until Russell Westbrook went down.
Yeah, you know, the whole NBA season in the last few months has been like one letdown after another between, you know, it started with Rajon Rondo and now, you know, with Kobe out and now Westbrook. It's just like one player after another that you would really want to see in the playoffs is not around. Yeah, you know, it's going to be really hard for Oklahoma City. I think they've really kind of figured out a system that allows Durant and Westbrook to play sort of one-on-one depending on who has the ball. And that sort of works because they're such, you know, reliable ball handlers and they can both finish around the hoop and they both, you know, Kevin Durant's a great shooter. And, like, I don't know if they have a game plan, really, now that Westbrook's gone. I think so much of the responsibility falls on Durant. And for somebody who hasn't had to, you know, carry a team, you know, I don't know if they can. I think they're going to beat Houston, but as for the next round, I don't know how it's going to go.
We've spoken several times this year about basketball, and I feel like it always goes to the Lakers. I don't want to spend too much time on the Lakers today because, really, there isn't too much to talk about. But what a disaster of a season. And I'm wondering, when we look back on the 2012-2013 Los Angeles Lakers, what will we remember?
You know, I think
Jack Nicholson leaving early.
Yeah.
That never happens.
That about sums it up, huh?
Yeah, I think we'll remember. You know, this is the year for me that Kobe became kind of a likable guy because, you know, I was never much of a Kobe fan because I always thought he was just sort of an asshole. But now, you know, just the way he treated his teammates and, you know, the way he handled the media. But now I just recognize that he's just a crazy person. And when there's a difference, you know, you have a little more sympathy for a crazy person. And then when that crazy person, you know, pulls off, you know, everything he did this season, you know, by having one of his best offensive years of his career and willing his team to make the playoffs, when a crazy person does that, then you sort of have to respect them and just sort of appreciate how much he really cares about playing basketball. So I think that's the one thing I'll remember. And the other thing is just like, you know, I think they really showed that you really need chemistry on the basketball court. And it took Miami Heat like two full seasons to get it. And for people to expect these guys to come together and in 1 year, especially an aging group, and in 1 year to, you know, make a real title run, I think that was sort of naive of everybody, including myself. I assumed that, you know, it would be them. I assumed they'd beat Oklahoma City and it'd be them versus the Heat. And that was just really wrong. You know, they had no role players. Dwight Howard didn't know how to fit in. Steve Nash is old and getting injured, and, you know, they barely made it into the playoffs. So I think it was a good lesson for everybody that the good teams, for the most part, really need to have an opportunity to gel together. And there's no wonder why, you know, the Spurs are always at the top of the Western Conference every year, because they have the same coach, the same, three sort of primary guys, and then they know what role players to fill the rest of the roster with. So I think, yeah, well, we've learned a lot that you can't, you know, to accumulate these super teams isn't necessarily the best way to go.
We've got a couple of minutes left with Max Kerman. Follow him on Twitter at Max_Kerman or at his work account, Arkell's Music. Max, huge day in basketball, but off the hard court. Your thoughts on Jason Collins coming out?
I was so happy. You know, it was actually as like sort of a consumer and a sports fan, just to see the way Twitter reacted. You know, between, you know, the basketball writers that I follow, and then seeing how other players across the league came out and showed support, I thought it was so inspiring. You know, of course, you're always going to be let down and disappointed by the trolls on some of the internet message boards that are just going to say the most ignorant things imaginable. But besides for that, I thought it was such an uplifting day. I think it shows how much popular culture and sports are intertwined. I think that, Hollywood and the music industry has always been liberal, but now I feel like the sports industry and music are all a lot more connected than they used to be. And I think there's a really progressive attitude. You know, when you think about guys like, you know, Kanye West and Jay-Z, who would be affiliated with sort of the hip hop culture that exists in basketball, and to see the way those artists, you know, have sort of opened themselves up to collaborations with, you know, with other performers, and just a general sense of openness, I think is really great. And I think the league has really done a good job of enforcing an attitude amongst players that, you know, we're going to be community minded, we're going to be good role models. And I think that that's been a real concerted effort by David Stern. I think that's actually a good thing, because in the late 90s, it wasn't the case. And I think, I don't know if there was as many sort of open minded, you know, people, you know, encouraging the sort of attitude that everybody displayed today.
Well, let's hope it transcends to other sports, and that this is, you know, a wonderful day for not just basketball, but really opens it up for everybody else as well.
Totally. Yeah. You know, it was Bill Clinton, Michelle Obama, Kobe Bryant, Baron Davis, Steve Nash, everybody sort of just got on board immediately. No questions asked. And, you know, the one guy in the basketball media that sort of annoys everybody is Chris Broussard. And
yeah, he got his.
Yeah, he's getting killed by just about everybody for the sort of, I think, ignorant things that he said following Jason Collins' announcement.
Max, appreciate your time tonight. Hopefully we can check back in with you during the NBA playoffs, and keep well the road.
Yes, sir. Yeah, thanks, guys. Hope all is well.
Well, we'll catch you soon.
Okay, cheers.
There he goes, Max Kerman from Arkell's. Always good to talk hoops with Max.
You know, Richard Burnett brought up something before, talking about the disingenuous type of support that Jason Collins has been getting. Well, you can call these guys out. If you're going to be disingenuous and you're just going to say for the sake of it that you support or that you have no problem with, it's better not to start your sentence with, "I'm not gay, but." Because you're seeing that. You're seeing that, and it defeats the purpose, and you're a dummy. Okay, you're not helping. So just keep it to yourself. And
I was thinking the days
seethe with hatred by yourself.
Remember that Mike Piazza press conference?
Yeah.
Remember the "I'm not gay" press conference?
Yeah.
Those days are over.
Yeah.
Those days are over. They have to be.
You'll see. I mean, we you know, because we're in Montreal, and, you know, I assume we're a little more tolerant than, you know, places south of Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
I could imagine what those feeds say. Oh, I have no problem with Jason Collins. That's I'm not gay, but I have no problem with him. And you're going to see a lot of that. And it's just wrong. If you have to announce that you're not gay, well, then you clearly have a problem with
well,
it, don't
that,
you?
That also goes back to the methinks ye dost protest too much.
Yes. Yes.
You know, keep saying it.
Yeah.
Let's go. We've got our next guest on the line. He is the funny man of the Kaufman Show. He brings it every single week for us. You can see him in Vancouver. He writes for the province. Torben Rolfson is his name. Van Guy on Twitter is his game. And that was an unnecessary rhyme. But hello, Torben. How are you?
I'm good, Dave. Jay, how are you guys doing?
We are. We're fantastic. We've had a great night on the air. We've had a bunch of fantastic guests. And we're ready to talk a little bit of playoffs with you right now.
Yeah, well, you know, the big story, Don Cherry stealing the thunder there, saying female reporters shouldn't be allowed in male dressing rooms. He also apparently doesn't believe fashion consultants should be allowed in clothing store change rooms.
Hi-ho. Jimmy.
Jimmy likes that.
Hey, Jimmy, what?
Jimmy doesn't like Don Cherry very much, so.
Iraq has suspended the licenses of Al Jazeera and 9 other channels, accusing them of inciting violence through their news coverage. As an alternative to promoting violence, Iraq plans to air the Leafs, Bruins, and Sens Habs series.
Oh, Jimmy.
So part of the fun is Torben's going to joke and make us laugh, and part of it is Jimmy going to hit the drum fill?
Yeah, we don't know. We never know.
Suivo next.
Of course, 4 out of 7 Canadian teams qualified for the playoffs. That's the highest percentage since last year's CFL season.
That's good. Yeah. I like that. I like that one.
And Ottawa, which is slated to begin play in 2014, will have 4 picks in the 2013 CFL draft on May 6th. What's worse, being traded for a player to be named later or drafted by a team to be named later?
Nice.
Clever CFL humor. I feel like you should be telling Andrew Buchholz about these.
He's a good guy. The NFL draft, at times I felt like I was watching a reality TV series starring Geno Smith and Manti Te'o. Jersey Snore.
Oh,
nice.
A play on words.
It had to be tough being Geno Smith Thursday night. It's ironic they call it the green room when the Benjamins are disappearing by the minute.
Good stuff, Torben.
And Manti Te'o, not selected in the first round, had to kill him to leave that phone line open for 24 hours.
Oh, no. Oh. How does it get better than that?
Wow.
Let's see what he goes. What's next?
It doesn't get better.
Okay. Fair enough.
A few days ago, the Detroit Tigers' Don Kelly was batting .095. That's .095. He's got the same swing to contact ratio as Shelley Duvall on the staircase in The Shining.
Wow.
I'd have gone with Miguel Cabrera's blood alcohol limit, but fair enough.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, Jimmy gets in the drum.
Kaufman gets one.
All right.
Oh, boy, Jimmy.
Nice Tiger tie in there. Tulsa, Oklahoma is bidding to host the 2024 Summer Olympics.
You're kidding me.
For gold.
Wait, that's the joke, right?
Yeah, but really, you don't need any more there,
no.
Do you?
Athens, London, Tulsa.
Early favorites for gold are the U.S., Canada, and Argentina in calf roping. This will be like the Calgary Stampede with bribery scandals.
I'm sure that exists already, Torben.
Yeah, and finally, pretty cool news of Jason Collins today. It's too bad it looks like he's at the end of his NBA career. Maybe Matt Barkley wasn't the only athlete this week who should have come out earlier.
I don't get it. And we're going to just leave it at that.
Okay.
No?
No.
Hold on. No. I feel like we have to explain because perhaps that was funny.
That was maybe a little bit obscure reference for us.
Matt Barkley, Torben?
Oh, just massive speculation and articles that he fell to the 4th round of the draft, and he almost went in last year's NFL draft, and he was slotted in as a top 5 pick at QB.
Yeah, that went right over my head.
Yeah,
top 5
wow.
Overall.
Yeah. So, what was I saying before? What was the best? The one that had me The best joke in there? Or the Manti Te'o leaving his phone line open.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think it was your Cabrera joke.
Oh.
That was the best one.
I can't vote for that one. That would be unfair.
Thanks for joining us, Torben.
Torben, anything to promote this week? Any shows in Vancouver for our massive Vancouver audience?
Yeah, well, they're small in number, but I can assure you they are increasing.
Awesome.
The big show Tuesday night, May 7th at the Kino Cafe, and yeah, it's going to be great. Stand-up's going great.
Awesome. Torben, we really appreciate it every week. It's fantastic. I love having my own personal Henny Youngman on the show.
Well, it's good to be here.
Thank you.
All right. Have a good night, you guys.
You too. There he goes, Torben Rolfson, rolling along here on The Kaufman Show. I would end it and play some Plaskett right now, but we've got people on the phones. And we want to speak
take
to them.
Take a couple of callers.
We
haven't taken many tonight.
We'll open them up. 514-790-1690, 1-866-896-2546. What's on your mind? What do you want to talk about? What's going on? What's new? What's up? What's down? Feeling the Habs? You want to talk Impact? Maybe getting excited for Alouettes starting up in a couple of months? Yeah, let's talk Alouettes for the next couple of hours.
What? I need to do some reading.
Look, the phones are flying.
Oh, okay.
Let's go to Andrew in Montebello. Hello, Chef.
How are you doing, boys?
We're great. How are you, sir?
Doing great. I'm going to keep this really quick. We'll get this on time.
Oh, no. Come on now. Are you clamoring for ESPN Radio to start? Like, what's going on here?
No, that's when I tune out, so I go to bed at that. No, seriously, I do. I love you guys for everything, but you can't be on the air all the time. I understand that.
Love you, too.
Radio Gold, boys. Put it in a bottle. Put it in a time machine. Label on it for your listening pleasure. This is how it is supposed to be done. Round table can't hold a candle to when you have Brian Wilde and Gagneau in the studio at the same time.
Isn't it a treat?
It is such a treat. It's just so much fun to listen to a common sense point of view from two individuals who probably never played the game, but I mean, they have so much know-how. And
you don't need to have played the game. I don't buy that.
They've been around. Those boys have been around.
That's the point I'm trying to make. Whether they be male or female, it doesn't matter where they played the game or not. These individuals get the game. They get the players. They get everything that's going to be coming to the forefront soon. But the only advantage I see in this, because the teams are so close in every aspect, is going to be the fans. And when I would say the fans, the way I look at it from around here, being in the Ottawa region a little bit,
mm-hmm.
When we play in Ottawa, it's going to be home ice advantage for the Habs. It's going to be 50-60% Habs fans in that place right now. Because I don't know what the exact numbers are, but I know people coming from the Quebec side that are actually ticket holders, your season ticket holders and stuff like that, there's a huge percentage that are Habs fans. I went a couple times last year, and it's just funny to see, because the Habs fan basically drowns out the Sens fans. They try hard, but they never get the job done.
Yeah, but Chef, I remember a phenomenon during the season this year. I was in Toronto in mid-February when I went to go see the Hip Arkells concert at the ACC.
Lucky you.
And yes, sir, and that's why I'm mentioning it.
Name dropping.
Absolutely. You know I do. And there was all this talk about a Leafs game upcoming in Ottawa, I believe, that weekend, and how season ticket holders had gotten a letter saying, please don't sell your tickets to Maple Leafs fans, because they were concerned about Leafs fans overrunning the building. I wonder if they're going to do something similar to try and combat it. It didn't work, but I wonder if they'll try and do something. I've never gotten a letter from the Habs telling me not to sell my tickets to a Leafs fan. They've said, don't sell your tickets, period.
It's just the fact, because when the Nordiques went away in this region, was one of the regions that was heavy on the Nordiques for a certain generation. It was basically to piss off their fathers. Just, no, I want to be different from Dad. I'm not a Habs guy. I'm going to go for the Nordiques. And when the Nordiques went away...
That's why I became a sports fan.
Well, that's a whole completely different show, buddy.
Yes, it is.
But it was just basically, okay, I'm going to go the next best thing. And it happens to be a new team. It'll be their team and stuff like that. And it's going to be fun to see the flags around on the cars around here, because it's not 50-50, but I know for a fact that the times that I've been there, and it wasn't necessarily, well, because it was the Habs, that the place was, like, seriously, 60, and I'm going lightly, at least 60% Hab fans in the place all the time. So it's going to be interesting to see. People are saying it's going to be between PK and Larson, Carlson, but seriously, Carlson, I was looking at the other night, and he's disgustingly good. I mean, I've never seen an individual that calm with a puck and be able to slow the tempo down that much in a long time as a defenseman. And he's got a great career in front of him, and I'm just hoping that he's not in as great a shape as he thinks he is, because he's going to do some damage in this series.
Jeff, I can't wait to see how it turns out, and we'll be here after, I guess, in advance of Game 3 on Monday night.
That's right. Well, some damage will already be done, so we'll be able to talk about it. The boys, once again, seriously, put in a bottle. I know it'll be on the podcast, but this show has got to get out there more often, because the quality of the people you have on it is just remarkable.
Thank you, Chef.
Thanks, bud. Appreciate it, man.
Appreciate it. Twitter is flying fast and furious. We've got Stuart Ashton saying he's usually asleep at this late hour. It's 12:03. But I'm enjoying the show too much to count the Z's. Thanks, fellas. Thank you. Anthony
DC. My boss.
That is your boss. I know. I was trying to play it cool.
Yeah, no, no.
Everybody head on down to McLean's Pub. The payment
is fun. Thanks, Stu, for listening. He never listens to me.
Conversely, because you have to take the bad with the good.
Yeah.
Anthony DC, Big Toe Jam. Please stop bashing the CFL. I want to talk about a boring sport. Baseball is it. I'd rather watch lacrosse. Nobody ever called lacrosse boring. I never called CFL boring.
I was
boring.
Watching The Rock play.
Was I really bashing the CFL? I mean, we're 3 days away from the NHL playoffs starting. It was kind of a joke to say that we were going to talk CFL football.
He was
football.
Simply implying that right now the Alouettes are out of season.
That's right.
That's all
that's
it
right.
is.
That's right. If you turn
I love the CFL.
Because you know, Jay,
I
that if you Canadian tune football. Into the Kauffman Show during the CFL season, it's wall-to-wall.
Yeah.
CFL talk.
Yes. I'm surprised we spent
John
so much time.
John Kakalakis can't keep a straight.
I'm surprised we spent so much time on the NBA. We never do that.
We've started this year.
Yes, I know.
We've had Kerman on half a dozen times, and, well, for the first half of the what was supposed to be the hockey season, that was only basketball.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to fill the time, and look at that. It got my attention. It was actually interesting stuff.
Let's, we got callers, Dave.
We do. 514-790-1690. This is the Kauffman Show on TSN 690. If you're listening online, you're finding us through iTunes or thekauffmanshow.podbean.com. Where are we going, Jimmy? We're going to go
we'll
up
go to
top.
Jerry and Andy G.
All right, let's go to Jerry. Hello, Jerry.
Hi, guys.
How are you, Jerry?
I'm all right. Here's my prognostication for the... I'm glad the Habs are going to meet Ottawa.
Bring it, Karnak.
I'm glad the Habs are going to meet the Senators because I hate the Leafs. And also, when you watch a Leaf game, the CBC is pro-Leafs. And by the way, Don Cherry still thinks he won the 1979 Stanley Cup.
Well, he was wearing the suit on Saturday night. I don't know if you noticed that.
His Bruin suit?
He was wearing his Bruin suit.
Well, I think he was doing that in support of Boston, obviously.
Of course.
Oh. Yeah. And that's fine.
Here's my prediction. I think the Habs are going to win it in six.
Okay.
I think the Penguins are going to beat the Islanders. I think the Leafs are going to lose to the Bruins, so we can say goodbye to the Leafs. And I'd actually like to see... even though I hate the Washington Capitals, because you know I lived in that area
That's
for
right.
over 30 years, but I'd like to see the Habs beat them. And
done it before.
Yeah, exactly. Just to prove that Montreal consistently has their number.
Beat them again.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a lot of friends there, so I'd like to get even with them.
Vengeance for the Nationals as well.
That's
right.
Right.
Okay.
And I say to the people who picked the Blue Jays for the World Series
that it's early.
Forget it.
Oh, it's so early. Come on, it's so early.
Well, a trend is forming. There are only two teams with worse records.
That's right.
Than the Blue Jays, and it's Miami and Houston.
Yep.
So that says something, Dave, because you know those two ain't going to get any better, that's for sure.
And I'm happy to see Miami stink up the joint, too.
San Francisco Giants, Jerry. The San Francisco Giants had the same record last year that the Jays have.
There you
today.
Go. Hey, basically, it's a long season. There's a lot of games. So
There's
much can 80% happen.
80% of the season.
You turn it around. You never know.
It's too
not
early.
Like I care.
It's
but,
just too early to panic. That's the whole thing. It's way too early to panic.
That's true.
It does. It does say something about the amount of media hype, and this is what we asked Alex Anthopoulos about when we had him on the show. But I understand how a Toronto baseball fan is conflicted right now, because all they've been told since November was they're going to win, they're going to win, they're going to win, it's going to happen, they're going to win 162-0. So when it doesn't happen that way, I could see how you start to freak out. And you've probably spent more on baseball tickets than you already have. And from my time in Toronto a few weeks ago, everybody in the city has a hat and a t-shirt and a jersey. Every single Torontonian.
Yeah.
I get how people are freaking out, but it's too early. You don't want a team that peaks. You don't want the team to be 20-0 right now. the Jays have had that team.
How many times did
the Jays have had that team a bunch of times in the last 5 years?
How many times did the Expos have such a great April and a great May?
And they're out of the conversation by the time the All-Star game starts.
Yeah, exactly. This is it. This is the year. And then, you know, that's baseball. Baseball is what it's. There's not as much urgency as there is in hockey. You know, hockey is very, very.
Well, especially in a 48-game season.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly, but even in the 82-game season, there's always a little bit of sense of urgency. You drop three or four in a row, and, you know, your record is going to feel it. In baseball, you drop three or four in a row, well, you've got 158 to make up for. Did you see how fast I did that math? Unbelievable.
I saw yesterday, I believe it was the great Bruce Arthur that tweeted that the Jays now need to go 81-55 to win 90 games. So that would be an impressive run.
Yeah, unlikely.
Unlikely.
Yeah.
Let's go to Johnny in the South Shore. Johnny, you are on the Kauffman Show. Hello.
A couple of quick points. Don Cherry this Wednesday, his suit, half Boston, half Toronto. I wonder how he's going to react. I wonder who he's going to pull for. His heartstring is probably bent out of shape.
Does it be interesting? You know what would be a great exercise for all of the Habs fans out there? Would be to not watch. And I know it's difficult because you want to see what, you know, you want to see what the idiot's going to say next. That's why we all listen to idiots. I have a lot of issues with Don Cherry, and they didn't just start on Saturday night. But I think it's incredibly shameful that gets such a forum in Canadian sports and society, and it's so backward.
Well,
you know, you look at the news that's come out today and the news about Jason Collins, and everything about that just points towards the future and things getting better. And could you imagine if that was a hockey player and we had to cut from that news to Don Cherry talking about it tonight?
Well, we're to
Thank
blame
goodness.
You're to blame where Ooh. We're giving
well you're blaming me now what do I do
we're you giving Cherry the platform.
You just called in and brought him up. That's fair.
I just said about his pro boss in Toronto.
I'm teasing you, man. I'm teasing you.
My next quick point is, Kauffman, you must be such a happy son. Your mom is gorgeous.
Thank you.
Yeah.
What an interesting thing
that
to say.
Real estate,
oh, that's not my mom. Elise. That's not my mom, and that's not my sister. But I know who you're referring to. You're talking about the real estate agent with the same last name. No relation. But maybe she'll sponsor the show one day. Thank you for the call, Johnny. That's hilarious.
Johnny was on to something, and that was something.
The part about my mom and sister. Being
no,
good
no,
looking,
we'll
right?
leave that out. Okay. But they are very good-looking ladies.
Of course.
Yes, they are. Hi, Mom. Just making sure. Want to get on her good side.
Right.
The thing about Don.
My mom loves you. What are you talking
about?
Yeah,
I know. She's sweet. Don Cherry. Johnny was getting on to something there, and what he's saying is, listen, you're not going to blame Don Cherry for being Don Cherry. You're not going to blame the CBC for putting Don Cherry on. You're only as good as your listeners or your viewers. That's how it is. People, why does Access Hollywood and shows like this put out such garbage?
Yeah, because people watch it. It's people watching. Look, it's the 2.5 men versus Community conversation.
Don Cherry,
when Community was a great show, that point held valid. But more people watch 2.5 men than any other show on television,
right.
Or did. And it does not speak to the greatness of the show.
It does not.
That a lot of people listen to.
Yeah, but you're not even talking about
watching.
If Don Cherry was a guy who came to the pub, you know what I would do? I mean, and I've seen a million guys like this, a guy who says something so quaint and so out of touch, so ancient, and he usually says it in the bathroom to a couple other guys, a racist joke, a sexist joke, a homophobic joke.
Yep.
You dismiss him as a foolish old man.
Right.
Right?
But we all pay for him to appear on television. And he's not on CTV.
As long as
Bell,
people are willing to pay for him to be on television,
he's
on the
public broadcast.
That's right. That's
we
right.
We pay to hear
There him. Are people who think this man is a hero.
Yes. Oh, seventh greatest Canadian of all time, right?
Right. The seventh grade.
Ahead of the guy that discovered insulin.
Yeah. And you know what? Don't get me wrong. I love Don Cherry's view on hockey itself. When he gets technical, I think he's brilliant. I really, really enjoy listening to him. I actually learn a lot from him when he's when he's talking out of the right hole in his body. Right? And, you know, and
knock his patriotism and his support of the troops and all the rest of that.
Yeah, yeah, and that's fine. And, you know, recently.
But again, there's a forum for it. And he has the, I mean, it's the Costas spot on Sunday Night Football. And Bob Costas has this spot where he gets to do a 2-minute dialogue on Sunday nights at halftime. And he used it last year to talk about gun control when that player shot his wife and shot himself.
Yes.
Don Cherry, given the same forum, talks about how women shouldn't be in the locker room.
Right.
And you saw Ron McLean's face when he said it, or if you didn't, I hope you did.
Right. And the thing is, if you're going to say something like it, back it up. Why? He made some remark about, well, I mean, he clearly has no idea what locker rooms are like nowadays.
Well, he clearly hasn't been in one in a very long
time. Yeah, there's not a bunch of guys with their bits hanging out, walking around, and the shower is not
flopping around.
Yeah, the shower is not in the middle of where the guys get. This is not 1952.
Right.
There are different facilities in a completely different room, you know? And every player comes out dressed. You're allowed in, I think, 5 to 10 minutes after, and it's ridiculous. He has nothing to back it up. When was the last time he was in a locker room? And which one? Back it up. Tell us why you think women should be. Because you know there's not going to be any good reason. And it's condescending.
Well,
when he
tried to give one, but it's the reason that he knows.
It's condescending.
Of course it is.
It's condescending. Well, women should be put up on a pedestal.
Yeah, that's right. They're better than us. It was, spare me.
That is so condescending. And I hope
and
there's
you saw
no
McLean
girl that falls for that.
You saw McLean just being like, I can't believe we're about to do this right now. I can't believe we're about to do this.
He knew it was going to happen.
I don't understand.
He knew what was coming.
How
he just had to roll his eyes in order to save his ass. It's very simple.
Well, I don't think McLean bought it. I don't think McLean gave him any kind of latitude when
he's still validating. He's sitting right next to him. He didn't cut it off. He didn't shut the camera down.
Yeah, but Ron McLean's
job. He didn't
job
throw his pencil like,
Dave Hodge. Yeah, well, and Dave Hodge hasn't been on the CBC in 30 years because of it. Mm-hmm. That move got Ron McLean a job.
Yeah. Anyway.
You know, it's Coach's Corner with Don Cherry. It's not the Ron McLean show.
Yeah. But you know what? So long as people want him on the air, you know, I mean, that says more to what our society is like right now, that there's a huge chunk of people that actually agree with this guy.
Oh, yeah.
And that's scary to me. It's not about Don Cherry. There's 100 old men like that that I meet every single day with these views.
You hang out
foolish
in some weird places, Jay.
Well, listen, you know where I work. You know, my other job entails, you know, a little bit of patience.
Yes, it does.
Especially when there's alcohol involved.
For sure.
You know, I mean, take it with a grain of salt. Don't get all frustrated and upset about it. I laugh. I think it's funny when he says things like that. I get a kick out of it. And somebody they compared him to Archie Bunker.
Yeah.
Which is exactly how I see it.
Sure.
I think it's funny.
Sure. But Archie Bunker was a television character in the 1970s that was viewed as out of date in the 1970s.
Viewed as out of date and written that way on purpose.
Right. Right.
Yeah. It was satire.
Right.
So, anyway, everybody should calm down.
Calling
Don't worry.
Rob Reiner meathead.
Yeah, yeah. The old man's going to be done soon. Don't get all crazy because he says something like that. Laugh it off. Think it's funny. And treat him like Archie Bunker. That's all. It's all a show. It's all a show. Don't dig too deep into it.
A few minutes left on the Kaufman Show. We'll take a couple more calls. 514-790-1690. 1-866-896-2546. We've got Mike in St. Leonard.
There he
Hello,
is.
Mike.
Good evening, guys. How are you?
Good evening. How are you?
Good, good. Sorry I didn't make my call in last week. I know I had to defend 80s music. And
You don't have to feel obliged to call in every week. We appreciate the call.
Well, I tried to call in, but it was too late. You're already starting to play Joel Plaskett.
Well, there you go.
Shoot, I called too late. But on the whole Don Cherry thing, just one point that you brought up, which I find in the States and even here in Canada, more cherry than anyone, it's almost an insincere cover they use. And that is, I support the troops, and that's why I hate blacks, immigrants, Jews, and gays. But I support the troops, yay! And it's kind of like an artificial cover that allows them to do whatever they want. It's like, I support the troops, so please forgive my 1950s viewpoint on the whole world.
I think a better example instead of the troops would be freedom.
Yeah.
I support freedom.
I support freedom and my right to be an absolute lunatic with views from decades before.
That one's called liberty.
Well, you know, it's a cover that he uses. It's almost like a shield of defense. Like, I know he says...
Like when he said women should be put on a pedestal because they're better than men are.
That's it.
It's condescending.
Exactly. It's like, I know I say crazy stuff, but I support the troops. So give me...
You're better than us, toots.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
You broads are the best.
And, Jay, I didn't know you were such a Pink Floyd fan. Pink Floyd, to me, is the same as, I guess, the Rolling Stones are to Kaufman.
Yeah, no, to me as well. They're probably my favorite band in the rock and roll genre, and actually one of my brothers as well. My brother is heavily, you can't really hear it because it's a different kind of music, but my brother is heavily influenced by Roger Waters and Dave Gilmour.
I love Floyd, man.
Yeah.
That's my jam. But on the other, the whole rock and roll thing, it actually ties into something you mentioned before, talking about some of the reaction on Twitter to Collins coming out today. And I remember, I don't know if you guys remember, when they did the AIDS benefit, Freddie Mercury AIDS benefit
yep,
show.
One of the greatest concerts of all time.
You remember the statement Metallica made before playing it? It's like, we don't support, I don't remember the exact word, we don't support Freddie's way of living or...
That's right.
Or the disease, but we support Queen's music. And so the ignorance never seems to fail. You know, it always exists. And I guess, you know what it is with Cherry or with even Metallica at that point in time, there's a little bit of...
They haven't changed. Have you seen Some Kind of Monster?
Yep, I've seen
What it. A bunch of jerk-offs these guys are.
They are, actually.
What a bunch of pretentious jerks. They're the worst of the worst. Just sniveling little, you know, they're just awful people. They really are. Great music.
Yeah.
Great music until about the time of that Freddie Mercury concert, until around 1990, Metallica was great. But wow, these are such unlikable people. They're undesirable.
You know what? It's funny because my wife's a bigger fan of Metallica than I am, and when I watched it, I thought to myself, what a mistake. You should have never opened the doors. I mean, your fans don't know that you guys are running around in beautiful Mercedes-Benz selling... Porch. Remember when
really
Lars
you don't you don't know that
cars?
About Metallica? You're
no,
kidding.
But
me.
You know what? It's not their image. It's not their image. Their image is
T-shirts and jeans.
Right.
And
their fans think these guys are rolling around in F-150s.
Oh, this is the guy. These are the guys that sued Napster.
Exactly. Yeah. These guys
bickering over pennies.
Over pennies, but you know they come across as being. You're absolutely right. Just like terrible people. Not so much Hammett, but Lars Ulrich.
No, Hammett was the most. He's the most. Likeable guy out of all of them. You know, he just knew when to keep his mouth shut and said, listen, I'm just making so much money here. And look at this drunken guy and this guy. It's just terrible.
Don't
terrible.
Open the doors. If you're not
self-absorbed crap.
Don't open the doors. It was bad. It's yeah. bad. I love it, though, because that's like 24CH, the real version. You know?
Yeah.
Like, what's really going on? By that note, did you guys see the last episode of 24CH last Saturday, I believe it was?
It's so hard to follow. I don't know when it's on.
Well, finally, we got to see some reality. Finally, we got to see Terry Ann go crazy on the team, which was beautiful, actually.
Oh.
Like little children when he went in there screaming his head off after, was it the Washington game? One of the games, anyways, recently that they had lost. I thought that was beautiful.
Is RDS or TSN, do they put it on their website or anything like that?
I bet it's streaming. I bet you that on the Bell Fibe, it's
Bell
probably
Fibe.
On demand.
Yeah, Bell Fibe yeah. is the key.
Yeah.
But, you know, besides that, guys, have a great evening. Great show as always. It's always great when you guys have those guests on.
Appreciate it, Mike.
And next time I'll make sure I call in earlier to defend New Order and Depeche Mode.
Good man.
Good man.
Thanks a lot for the call.
Have a good evening, guys.
We appreciate it. And we appreciate all of you who've called and texted and tweeted and sent up flares and... Pigeon carriers and all the rest of the things
what?
That we do.
Pigeon carriers?
Well, I don't know.
Okay.
We did say Jimmy was in the era of
rotary
phones,
right? I was
going
to say, it's Jimmy's form of communication. Pigeon carriers.
He uses a rotary phone.
Yeah.
Actually, I wouldn't mind getting my hands on one of those. Nostalgia, right?
Jimmy's watching Game of Thrones. He said, you can send messages by horses now?
Was it you and Jonah that sang the Game of Thrones? Jonah Carey and someone, it must have been you, singing the Game of Thrones theme song
no.
in studio?
No.
Who Who was it? It was definitely Carey, but it wasn't me. I don't know the song. I don't watch
the show. There's a great video out right now of a band that did the cover. A very exciting cover of Game of Thrones. I forget what the name of the band is, but it's a really, really great YouTube video.
Okay.
And it's just the four or five of them sitting around with cellos and one drummer, and it's so good. I mean, there's been a lot of covers. Even some heavy metal bands have done it, but this one is different. It's very raw, and you can see they're very into it, and it's just a great cover of a very, very catchy theme.
Well, someone just lent me the first season, so I'm going to have to check out Game of Thrones. It's
good. It's confusing, but it's good. You need to watch it with a map in front of you.
A map?
Yeah, it's kind of like Lord of the Rings in the way that you have to understand the different cultures and the different kingdoms and all that. There's a lot of work.
I heard
cerebrally
it was sort of Lord of the Rings with boobs.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
All right. I think and you need to map. So
yeah,
boobs
I actually
maps.
Had to look up a map and say, where are they now? That's the only problem that I have with it. It's like, you know, where are they? What kingdom is it? Who is this guy?
You think there'd be an app for that?
Oh, there is. I'm sure there is. Come on. This is a fantasy world type scenario. You think, there's a lot of guys who work on computers that are watching this. Believe me.
Fun show tonight.
Yeah, excellent show. Great
was,
show. Love
show
having
tonight.
Those guys in.
It was great, as always, to have Brian and Francois in studio. We're really lucky that they like the Kaufman Show. It's a good thing because it makes for really awesome radio when we get those two in a room. And, you know, they're so constrained on television by time. So it's a
they
blessing
love radio.
To be able
they
to give
love
it to
doing
them.
It, though. They love doing it because it's relaxing. And
absolutely.
You know.
We try not to stress out our guests here on... at TSN 690.
We try not to, yeah.
I also want to thank Bugs Burnett and Max Kerman and Torben Rolfson and Jay Farrar and John Kakalakis and Jimmy G. And Jimmy, that's your cue to play some Joel Plaskett for me. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Listen up, kid, it's not what you think. Stayed out too late, had a little too much to drink. Walk home across the bridge when the marquee shut down. There's a reason that I love this town. Nobody cares how much money you have. If you've got enough to get in a cab, there'll be drinks on the house. If your house burns down, there's a reason that I love this town. I saw your band in the early days. We all understand why you moved away. We'll hold a grudge. I shot the shit with miniature Tim. If he needs a tune, then I'll write one for him. We like the same books and we like the same sounds. There's a reason that I love this town. I played a show in Kelowna last year. Said, pick it up, Joel. We're dying in here. Picture one hand clapping, then picture half that sound. There's a reason that I hate that town. If you saw my band in the early days, then you understand why we moved away. But you hold a grudge. It's fun. Davey and me, face down in our suit. Some French restaurant, I saw Riviere de Loup. Last night at a tour, we burnt the place to the ground. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this
been listening to The Kaufman Show, where if you can play, you can play.
I don't know. What'd that sound like?
This has been The Kaufman Show with Dave Kaufman and Jay Farrar, only on TSN 690. Ever.